gathered together from the cosmic reaches of the internet. Here in the basement of the Great Hall of Justice are the most powerful forces for good podcasting ever assembled. This is the DC Superpowers Podcast.
This looks like a job for Superman.
To the Batmobile.
My name is John Jones.
I am the Green Arrow.
Hey, super friends, welcome back to the DC Superpowers Podcast, issue number 81 for New Comic Book Day, November 15th, 2017. I'm one of your hosts, Ken Rose, and sitting along with me here in the basement of the Hall of Justice is my good buddy, Vern.
Hello, everybody. How you guys doing tonight?
It's nice to be back in the basement again, isn't it?
It is. I love Comic-Con. I love seeing all the beautiful faces, but the basement's our home.
That's right. Now, you guys last week heard our show from Comic-Con. That was phenomenal. I want to thank everybody over at Akron Comic-Con for giving us that opportunity, getting a chance to get out there, see all the listeners, and actually just do our show live on stage in front of all the new people. And if you're listening and you heard us for the first time at Comic-Con, welcome to the show.
Yep. Thank you, guys. If you are new listeners, this is what you're going to get every week. We're going to do reviews, talk about the stuff in the media, just talk about DC Comics all together.
Exactly. And also, remember, if we gave out a bunch of stickers at Comic-Con.
We gave out a lot of stickers.
I gave out some more this past weekend at Con on the Cop.
Nice.
But
and somebody at work even came through and they subscribed to our channel too.
Our
podcast on iTunes, so that was nice.
So we're getting the word out there, getting a bunch of new listeners and people checking us out. But if you want stickers, we still have stickers left over. Send us an email at dcsuperpowerspodcast@gmail.com and send us your name and address and we will send you a sticker.
We sure will. We sure will.
So, and then still in the Comic-Con vein, later on in the show here, we told you guys that they did the 40th anniversary of Black Lightning panel.
Yes, it did. It was a great panel, too.
Oh, yeah. It was phenomenal. So, but later on in the show, we are going to have that panel in its entirety playing as part of our show. Now, this was a panel that actually put together Tony Isabella, who created Black Lightning. Trevor Von Eden, who was
the artist on
Black Lightning, character. And you'll hear on here, he was only 16 years old when they hired him to do this.
He was a very young man. He was right out of high school.
Exactly. And also Jack C. Harris, who was the
editor
for Black Lightning. So we get some really good stories out of that. But that's later on in the show. But before we get into that, since we have that, we're going to have a little bit less news than normal.
Yeah, just a little bit less. How long was that panel, by the way?
There is some. It's about 45 minutes or so. But there is some huge news that we couldn't skip no matter what.
The internet itself, social media, everywhere was blowing up about this.
Well, mainstream, this even hit like the New York Times and the Washington Post.
Yeah, it was out there. You're a comic book reader. This actually, the franchise that's building up now with everything in the media, in the news, the comic book world is just blowing up right now. Comic cons are blowing up because of now a trending topic of itself. Comic books.
Are. We were gonna throw a couple of news stories in front of it, really little ones, but no, we got to hit the big ones first. One of the biggest names at Marvel Comics, Brian Michael Bendis. He's been there since the year 2000.
Yeah, he's been there for 17 years. He's been over there way over 15 years now.
He has now signed an exclusive contract to write for DC.
Exactly. So we're going to benefit from this.
Oh, yeah. Time. So, and actually found Cleveland.com. Anybody who doesn't know, Cleveland.com is the Cleveland Plain Dealer. That's Cleveland's big newspaper. Put up an article actually today at time of recording. And they got some pretty good... some quotes. They actually talked to Brian Michael Bendis about going to DC. And interesting thing is he said one of the main reasons he decided to switch to DC was because of the Superman exhibit that is going on right now at the Cleveland Library, which we talked about, I think, back in June or July
when it
was coming.
Yeah.
Which we still have to get up there and see.
We still do. We got to take a vacation, a mini vacation.
But some of the things he said, he was actually in town this is a quote from Brian Michael Bendis. It says, I was in town for my brother's wedding and went to the library, which was so important to me growing up. And I saw the Superman display. It was a flood of impressions and Cleveland connections. While looking at the Superman artifacts, I realized that I had not climbed the DC mountain, but I needed to. Now, he spent 20 years at Marvel, and he said later on that actually he just celebrated his 50th birthday.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's like so it was time for a change and time to actually try something new.
Yeah, and from what I was hearing a lot of other articles or reading a lot of other articles and seeing some videos up on YouTube, people were saying he's up in age. He's not, you know, old, yeah, but he's getting to the point where he wants to do something different. He should do it now and get it out of his system. And one of the things he wanted to do was he's been working at Marvel for so long. DC's the other step.
Yeah.
And you know this, we're into the wrestling culture. A lot of the guys that have been on the indie scene, they want to get to WWE.
Exactly.
They want to do some things, and they want to move out and try different things before it gets too late for them in their time. So,
well, we know that Brian Michael Bendis is supposed to start working for DC January 1st.
Yeah, the beginning of the year.
So they've not mentioned at all where he's what he's going to be working on, what he's not going to work on.
Now,
I had an interesting theory.
Yeah, I was wondering what were some of your theories, and even on this article they're trying to figure out what would he be working on.
Well, we know Brian Hitch, they just put out and actually one of the books we're reviewing this week, Justice League number 32, is or this wasn't even his. It was Justice League number 31, I believe, was his last book doing Justice League.
Yeah.
So that leaves Justice League kind of in limbo. Now, Robert Venditti did this week's Bats Out of Hell Part 2.
Yeah.
Next week, we have a different writer, which we will be having in our reviews. Actually, I can bring that up right now because I have the tab up in front of me. Next week, we are getting Tyler Kirkham doing the art, and it was written. Oh, Brian Hitch is back writing it again in issue number 33. So I'm wondering, what's the chances that Brian Hitch finishes up this run and hands it off to Brian Michael Bendis to do Justice League?
Well, as we talked about in the past, Brian Hitch was doing better to me at the end of his run.
Yeah.
Now, if he's going to hand it off to, I guess, the other Brian.
Well, that would be a huge thing for him, because that's pretty much the premier top team book.
Yeah.
Which, I was talking to Kylan on Geekwatch 1 this week, because we recorded it before this, and he was saying that Bendis really isn't super strong doing team books. He's written everything at Marvel.
He's done
X-Men.
Yeah, I was going to say,
but he
Avengers
was better
a team book.
In gritty single characters. Like he created Jessica Jones.
Yes, and that was one of that stood out for Marvel, because Marvel was known as being a little bit more lighthearted unless you had Punisher.
Yeah.
But with, I think they also were on that Max run with the Punisher. So was Jessica Jones for Alias.
Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. I think Justice League would be a good place. I mean, let him start off at the top.
Mm-hmm.
But what do you think? What book do you think he could use to...
Personally, since he's going to be coming in January, probably not. But I was thinking maybe he would be somebody that would work on Shazam for the rebirth, because we haven't seen Shazam at all yet.
Bring back Shazam, which we know they've not announced anything. So this is not a spoiler. This is not a news.
This is our speculation.
With them working on a Shazam movie,
mm-hmm,
they're going to want him in the book somewhere.
See, that's what I'm thinking. And plus, we're now getting all these articles up of who's playing the Flash. Now they got the child actor playing the Flash, or the Flash,
Shazam,
playing Billy Batson now.
Yeah.
So I think it's time for them to introduce him back into comic books. Now we've seen DC, whatever seems to be playing in the media, they're going to do right in their books.
Well,
too,
that's DC, Marvel, all the different companies do that.
Yeah. Well, with DC, I feel like they're a little bit more subtle with it.
Yeah.
They don't exactly do the same things you see on the screen, but if this character is out, they're going to show you it in the comic books too. Just like Black Lightning, it's getting his own show in January, and the books just came out this November. So I'm wondering if he's going to be working on that or any other book he could work on.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think, because from what I've heard, I've not, since I don't read Marvel, we know that.
Mm-hmm.
But so I'm not familiar a lot. I mean, I know the name. You can't read comics in general, and we check the news sites all the time.
Always.
You can't do that, any of that, without seeing him pop up somewhere.
Yeah. I just punched up an article where some was the CBR.com, who they think he should be riding, and one of them actually is Shazam too.
Okay.
Batman, of course. Batman.
Actually, the one picture
somebody
they showed there, I believe, was possibly doing a Maggie Sawyer title.
Ooh.
Because wasn't that a picture of Maggie Sawyer?
That was Maggie Sawyer.
Justice League?
Yeah, it's Maggie
what
Sawyer,
else?
Batgirl, Batman, Shazam, Justice League.
Now, what does it say about Justice League on that? The fact that they haven't announced anyone new yet?
Well, they said Bendis has been known for knows a thing too about superheroes established. Following the events of Avenger Dissembled in 2004, he basically became Mr. Avenger for writing all the comic books and the Earth's Mightiest Heroes, the New Avengers, and the Mighty Avengers. Man, that's a lot of Avenger books.
Yeah.
The main series came to mind, and he showed that he could have a prediction for in the DC world, or with Marvel, was the Dark Avengers. He did that, too. And
yeah, he, like I said, that, I looked over some of his resume, and it's like, he's written Avengers. He wrote multiple different versions of Avengers. He's written X-Men. He's written all the team books.
And one of his last books was Guardians of the Galaxy, too.
Yeah, Guardians. But in 20 years, he's basically written everything in Marvel.
Yeah, he's one of those... I guess one of those famous people are just people that accomplish so much in what they want to do. Now they can actually move on and do other things that they mm-hmm. haven't done, which I think is a blessing in the sky right there. So
I'm almost thinking he would want to because Superman, like it says in that article also, he grew up. Well, anybody who doesn't know, he actually grew up in Cleveland.
I didn't know that until tonight.
Yeah, I told you tonight. But he grew up in Cleveland. That's why he was here for his brother's birthday. His brother still lives here in Cleveland. But
I remember hearing about some of the stuff when he was up there in Cleveland.
Mm-hmm. Well, it says another quote from him from this Cleveland.com article was, I just had a landmark 50th birthday, and I had lost a lot of weight, and I was thinking about what else I could do to scare myself. What could I do next? DC was coming at me pretty hard with offers that were hard to resist, but it was not until I walked into the library and everything came together. I remembered how much I connected with Superman, how I was an artist during the 1988 Superman convention in Cleveland. And it says the never-ending battle the Cleveland convention, or the 1988 Superman convention was called the never-ending battle celebrating the 50th anniversary of the Man of Steel. So, Justice League would be, I think, a good fit because Superman being a large part of the team.
Yeah, you could work with him.
And plus, it would be cool to see him maybe step into the actual Superman title because I love Dan Jurgens on Action.
Yeah, I do too.
I don't want to see him go anywhere.
No, but if there's someone he wanted to take over, it would be easier for him to do for just a regular solo title with Superman. And
well, Superman has switched titles already, or has switched authors already during the series.
Yeah, several times.
So it'd be a good. I think it might be a fun fit for him in there.
Yeah, and
get a different take on Superman a little bit.
And I think I'm really liking the idea of him just doing Justice League because you get to work with Batman, you get to work with Superman,
yeah.
You get to work anybody. Well, not anybody, but maybe, the main top characters of DC.
Maybe start slowly expanding the Justice League a little bit.
Yeah, that would be nice.
Also, you got to think after they probably already got the team that's developing it, but you got to remember coming in real soon, we're getting the Terrifics.
Yes, we are.
And there's two or three other titles that are spinning out of Metal.
Yeah. And we don't know if we're... And since he likes dark characters, they did not exactly say what kind of books we would get, but they did say a lot of the Dark Knight Metal characters, they would like to keep showing them up every once in a while.
Yeah.
So we might be able to write a series with them.
Cool. Well, another real quick... Just a quick hit is... you probably have the article up about the Justice League. Some of the... Non-spoiler reviews are up for Justice League because remember, this weekend Justice League hits theaters, so everybody should already have your tickets.
Hopefully. I had to pre-order my tickets. So I looked last week and they were like, "Oh, it's filled up. I'll be fine." Looked again, and it's like, "Oh man, most of these seats are taken up already." Yeah. At least at our local theater. But yeah, the reviews are in. I was even telling Ken earlier. Once again, I saw some stuff from Rotten Tomatoes. They didn't give it the best.
That's just Rotten Tomatoes. Their job is to poo-poo on everything.
Yeah. Now I know in the past there was mixed reviews with Suicide Squad. Batman versus Superman, but this I've been seeing a lot of positive reviews from a lot of the comic book reviewers, a lot of the YouTube people that do the videos for the TV shows on the CW. They loved it. They said the best thing from there was Flash, Wonder Woman, and sometimes Aquaman, or it could have been Flash, Cyborg. Maybe it's Batman. They really didn't have anything negative to say about any of the characters.
Now, did any spoilers leak out?
Yeah.
Okay. Do we want to know them?
No.
Okay.
I found out.
You found out spoilers that you're not going to let us know, right? Because
no,
I don't want to know.
And
I don't
believe them either because I'm like, okay. I hear you, but I don't believe you. I have to see the movie first. And this wasn't about the...
Is Jon Jones showing up?
They didn't say.
Oh.
Sadly. I think my dream just crushed.
Did the spoilers have anything to do with the seventh Justice League member?
Maybe.
Okay.
Maybe.
That's
maybe,
all I want to know because I'm going to find out in a couple days anyway.
Well, that's why I said something that happened that I didn't believe, I'm going to wait till the movie comes out. This is why I say spoiler free, but when you go in and you listen and, oh, here's a spoiler, like, dang
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
But.
Well, next week, we're going to talk about Justice League, but we are not going to, we're going to do everything we can not to spoil the movie yet.
Now,
the week after next, It's on like Donkey Kong.
Yeah. Now, since we're talking about Justice League, I'm going to mention the stay after movies. This is what did get spoiled for me was the after credit scene.
There is an after credit scene.
Yeah, there definitely is an after credit scene. Jason Momoa himself said, "Stay after the movie. Wait for all the credits. You're paying your money. It's worth it. Don't leave." So, when you guys go see the movie, definitely stay. The other movie I was even telling Ken that had the post-credit scene, DC tried to stay away from that because they thought they were going to be compared to Marvel, because Marvel's known for...
They're going to be compared to Marvel either way.
And that's... They're like, you know what? We're our own thing. We're not worried about comparisons no more. But the only other movie in the DCU, or if you want to call it that, was Suicide Squad. Man of Steel, Batman vs. Superman, Dawn of Justice, and Wonder Woman strayed away from because of all the references with the Marvel Cinematic Universe. But Suicide Squad did have that when Ben Affleck was talking to Amanda Waller so he could get his Justice League team together with their files. So this one's going to have something at the end. I really don't know exactly what, because I said I don't believe the spoilers, and if it is, I'm not telling you guys. So stay after the movie.
Well, next week you can tell us if it was correct.
Yeah, right?
We still don't have to tell everybody what it was, just was exactly. The spoilers you read correct.
But by then, we'll be okay, because you guys should see the movie by then.
Exactly. And like I said, next week, if you for some reason can't see it this weekend coming up, we'll give you another week before we spoil
it. We're not going to go full in spoiler. We're going to let you know what we thought of it and if the after credits scene was good or not. Not telling you what happened, now, but if it was good or not.
If you do want all the spoilers, Geek Watch 1 next week will be a full spoilery Justice League show.
And they get to hear your voice again.
That's right.
So, hey. Bonus for you. Stay after
the
credit.
All the news we were getting into, though.
Yeah, I was just going to say this one thing. It's not that big of a thing to talk about, but Zack Snyder did want to have actually a post-credit funny scene, comedic scene, at the end of Man of Steel. But at the time, Warner Bros. Told him no, they didn't want to go that route.
No, not with how serious Superman or Man of Steel was, it would have been hard to put a comedic scene in there.
But me hearing that, I'm thinking, so how much of this dark stuff was Zack Snyder's idea and how much of it was Warner Brothers?
I think it was a little bit of both.
Yeah. But Zack Snyder tried to make it maybe make up for the death scene of Zod. Yeah. He was trying to say, hey, we're going to have fun now. But
that's what it was. It wasn't all just Warner Brothers. It was Christopher Nolan who vetoed it.
That's right, because he did...
It says right there.
Yeah, and he did... produce it. He was the producer on that movie.
And you
got to
think, there was really very little levity in the Dark Knight trilogy.
Yeah. The only thing that was, it made me even giggle was Heath Ledger sometimes, but really Alfred. Heath Ledger was even a very dark Joker. Alfred was the lighthearted side to that whole franchise, in my opinion. But that's what we got for Justice League. So we'll let you guys know what happens after this week.
Well, I think this is a good point. We're going to just turn this over to the guys who actually created and brought you Black Lightning. So we're going to hand it over to Jack Harris, or Trevor Von Eaton, and Tony Isabella.
Hi, kids.
Hello.
This is the Black Lightning panel. This is the 40th year of Black Lightning's existence. And up here you have... the three guys who were most involved in the first Black Lightning series. My name is Tony Isabella. I created the character and wrote him, and have written him twice since, in the 90s and currently. This is Trevor Von Eaton, who at the tender age of, what were you, 16?
16, almost.
16, we threw Trevor into the deep end of the pool, and he swam. I mean, he did a great job on Black Lightning. We never made it easy for him. I mean, he got the same script from given anybody. And
this is Jack. That was easy. A 16-year-old kid getting a chance to draw comics. I would have paid you guys.
And then we have Jack C. Harris, who was the original editor of the Black Lightning series in the 70s. Let me, as I normally do at these things, before I start interviewing these guys, let me update you on what's happening with Black Lightning quickly. DC Comics this week has released the first issue of a 6-issue series called Black Lightning Cold Dead Hands. It is my third time writing the character. We have basically thrown out 40 years of continuity, but held true to the core values of the character. It's being drawn by Clayton Henry and edited by Jim Chadwick. First issue is available for myself and other dealers out there. So that's the comic book. Over at the TV series, a couple months back, I was flown to Burbank, California, to meet with the writer's room of the Black Lightning TV show. Very smart, intelligent people. And if you ask me the right questions later on, I'll tell you a little bit more about that visit. But I will tell you that there were two big whiteboards on either side of the room. And on one of those whiteboards, and I'm not sure I've told you this yet, they had nothing but pictures of characters, several of them drawn by you. They had photos of the actors that had been cast, and a list of names of possible characters that might be in the series. And there's a whole lot of us.
Really?
And the other wall had the first 13-episode series broken down roughly in those episodes. And again, an awful lot of us was on those walls. They showed me, I answered questions from the writers. They clearly had not only read the Black Lightning comic books, they studied them. I was being asked to answer questions of things I wrote 40 years ago. They showed me the presentation piece that was done to sell the show to the CW. It's what the trailer was taken from. And I got to tell you, I'm really hopeful for this show. I loved what I saw. I loved the acting. I loved the writing. It is not exactly what we did in the comic books, nor should it be. But I'm really expecting this to be just a big, huge success when it hits the CW sometime in the mid-season. So that pretty much updates you on Black Lightning.
You can help make it a success.
That's right.
That's what I
mentioned. And buy a lot of copies of the comic book, too, and the trade paperback and all that stuff, because the more money DC makes off Black Lightning, the more Black Lightning you'll get. So, I'm going to start with Jack, because Jack was involved with Black Lightning slightly before you.
Yes, I'd say.
So, Jack.
Yes.
You were an editor at DC.
I was.
Longer than I was, because I couldn't stand it back then. But, Bob Rozakis had originally been the editor of Black Lightning, but then moved into production.
Right.
When did your involvement with Black Lightning come about?
Right after that, there was a shakeup when they were shifting people around. And then they gave me the list of books I was doing, and Black Lightning was one of them. And two of the reasons, one, I had a reputation for being able to get along with anybody, including you. And the second one is that I had basically discovered Trevor Vidy. The editors would get things from the slush pile, and we had to go through them and evaluate them. Most of the time, 90%, 99% of the time, we just said thanks, but no thanks, and sent back. I opened up Trevor's package. It was typing paper and ballpoint pen drawings of superheroes, characters. And some of them were better than the artwork we were currently buying from professional artists. So I remember I took it down to Joe Orlando, who was the managing editor at the time. I said, look at this. And he said, wow, look at these. And I said, some 16-year-old kid. And so he said, call him up. Have him come in. And I think Trevor came in with his father, if I remember correctly.
I did everything with DC alone.
Oh, okay. He came in, and they took him under his wing. And then, so when the book came out, they said, we're going to have Trevor do this book. And my first thought was, really? He's only 16 years old. You know, and it's a brand new character. I said, yeah, but I think he can do it. I said, well, okay, I'm with you. I'll go with that. And I had not worked with Tony before, but I had admired his work for a long time. And I said, I can do that. Let's try it. Let's do it. And that's how it started.
And
well, I remember, I'll make this short, I hope. When I was in school, I'm a pretty good student. And the thing about school is every school, they repeat the lessons 2-3 times for the sore students, which is cool. But I got into the habit of practicing drawing in the margins of my school books, just to save myself from being bored while the teacher repeated the lessons 2-3 times. Anyhow, so that's where I learned how to draw. And when I was about 16, going on 17, my best friend, a guy named Al Simonson, who had introduced me to comics, because originally I'm from South America. I came here in 1970, when I was going on 11. And I'm from what was originally British Guyana, which is now Guyana. It's the only English-speaking country in South America. So when I came here, it's a British colony. So when I came here at 10 to 11 years old, I was already, I'd been exposed to a couple of Marvel comics. But the culture I came from, Guyana was like the second poorest country in the Western Hemisphere. No television, you know, we ran around barefoot all day, you know, because it was tropical all around. But comics, when I first discovered comics, I was about eight years old. And as I said, I was an A student, so it wasn't like I was a stupid person. But comics were a wonderful escape. Now, the thing is, I'll make this short. Sorry. I taught myself to draw because I love to read. And I taught myself to draw so that I could put down on paper the images that the books I read put in my head. Because when I read, I visualize. When you read something good, you visualize it. When you read something mediocre, you just see words, at least me. So that's why I taught myself to draw, just because I love English so much. So the way I came to Tony is a friend of mine who I met when I first came to America introduced me to his comic book collection. He had about thousands of them. Now, I read a couple of comics back home in Guyana, but when I got here and I saw the wonderful world of comics, I fell in love with it. And I actually started seriously trying to draw superhero characters, imitating my favorite artists, Kurt Swan, Neil Adams, John Buscema, the immortal Jack Kirby, etc. So my best friend who got me into comics, who kept encouraging me to do drawings, one day decided to take it upon himself to send some of my drawings into DC, the ballpoint pen drawings. And DC Comics sent me back a form letter. It said, "We like your work. If you're ever in the area, drop by." I lived in the Bronx at the time. DC Comics was in Manhattan, 45 minutes away. It took about 2 days for me to realize this was real. 45 minutes to get there. Now, here's the thing. When I got there, they had me sit in the waiting room. And I remember at one point, somebody stuck his head out the door, you know, for the inside door, and kind of like gave me the once over and then popped his head back in. 10 minutes later, some of those came out, brought me to Jack, then took me to Joe. And what had happened is the guy who popped his head out saw that I was dark-skinned. You know, they invited me because they saw my work. And by the way, if you come to my table, I have some of those 16-year-old drawings I did that impressed Tony and Jack. I actually have them on display, as well as some of my original Black Lightning drawings for his costume, which Tony and Jack also worked on to make his official costume. So you guys drop by my table with Tony and see what I actually drew back then that, you know, got me this gig. But getting back to my story, like I said, when they saw that I was black, that's when things started popping, because they were considering creating their first black superhero. Tony will tell you about the original idea for that guy. But anyhow, so I showed up. The kid is talented, he's black, so they called me in, met Joe Orlando. And I remember this day, Joe was giving me the, you know, spiel about it. He said, "We have a black book we want you to do." And I didn't know what the hell it meant, because he said a black book, and I envisioned a book with all black pages. It makes sense. I'm 16 years old. I come from a different country. So the whole environment of America is new to me. The place I came from, buildings were no more than three stories tall. So the first 2 years I spent in America was just running around Manhattan, just bugging out on these incredible buildings that touched the sky. I've never seen that before. So I'm literally the immigrant that came to America and found a dream. And now that I'm 58, 47 years later, I got to tell you, that dream is still alive. Because the thing about life and the thing I like about comic book people is if you want to get something out of life, something good, you got to have something good to give. Alright? Too many people, they get dumped on and they pass that on. So everyone gets miserable. But for me, if you want to be a good person and you want to have a good life, you have to design it. And that means you have to be a good person. Alright? I just want to make this this little sidebar. Because it's very important to me that people love themselves before they relate to anyone else. Because if you don't love yourself, you make your entire world worse. And what art does for me is it enables me to think all day about the things I'm talking about now, to come to conclusions, to make my own decisions by thinking about issues that are important. so that when I go out in the world, I know what I want and I know how to get it. And what my work does, what my art does, it helps me to be happy. Because art is supposed to make you happy. Art is a small part of life, but it's supposed to make you happy, right? Life is a long-running show. Art is a small part of it, but it's supposed to make you happy. So when they brought me in, and Gerald Lennon said, we have this black book for you, and I don't know what he meant. He said, we have a black character. And then he said, all this time I'm standing there. And then he said, we're going to pay you $22, right? And I'm 16 years old. I'm getting a chance to draw a whole comic book, not just the first black character. And $22, I was like, oh my God, $22 for this whole book? And then he said, $22 a page. I sat down, because to me, that was big money. So anyway, but the point I'm trying to make is that's how I came into the fold. Because they liked my work, you know, they saw that I had the bright color skin for the character we were creating, and they brought me in. And then I met Jack and Tony. Jack is one of the nicest guys I've ever met in comics. And I don't know Tony as well as I know Jack, but Tony is at least as nice as Jack from what I know. Seriously, these are two good guys. And it's because of these fellas that the 40 years I spent in my career after Black Lightning, which was not so pleasant. The memories I had of my beginning are what kept me through the rough parts of my career. And this gets back to a point I'm trying to make about loving yourself and loving others. Good memories are the most important things you can have in life, because when times get tough, and it gets tough for everybody, those good memories are what keep you going, right? And I know this from personal experience. I've never been suicidal, but I've been very depressed in my life, like most people, like most artists, you know, manic, depressive, up and down. But the thing is, you always got to realize, you always got to have a center that defines yourself, and it's got to be something positive. It's got to be. Otherwise, you are degrading everything you touch, all right? Whereas if you have happiness in you, because that's what art's about. It doesn't matter if you crochet, if you paint, if you paint walls, if you cook, whatever you do that gets you closer to the part of yourself that makes you happy, that's art. And you don't have to get paid for it, but you have to be honest about it. You have to give something, you have to give love to get love. And I'm not talking about, this is important, because I'm not talking about playing with yourself. I'm talking about playing by yourself. When you can play by yourself, when you can enjoy yourself, when you enjoy your own company, you will have a happy life. It all starts with you. And the reason I'm bringing this up here is because the thing I love about comic book people is they have that sense of joy. They have that sense of wonder. They have that child in them that isn't dead yet. And that child is all about making your dreams come true. People come here and they dress up like Superman and Batman and Wonder Woman because they respect the character. That those characters, they're fictional characters, but the characters that those characters represent, that they want to be as people. So when someone walks around dressed like Superman or Batman, it's not something you laugh at, it's something you look at and say, that's somebody that's trying to enjoy themselves and their lives. You know? So I wanted to make a general point from a specific statement. You know, the whole thing is how I got to be an artist, but my whole thing is why you should be an artist, and that's to make you happy. So that's all I wanted to say on that subject.
Well, I think that was very profound, so now I'm going to get silly. I'm going to tell them about the Black Bomber. Okay, when I came over to DC from Marvel, and I'd come over because Marvel was chaotic, and I thought, you know, DC, I'd be working with adults. You know, which didn't exactly turn out that way, but I was brought in at DC because they wanted me, among other things, to write, because I had written Luke Cage and the Falcon and the Living Mummy, who was black, but nobody really knew it because he was all wrapped up in bandages. I'd written these black characters at Marvel, and they wanted to do a black superhero in DC, so, you know, I came to DC, and there was one obnoxious executive who always used to refer to me as their black writer. And, you know, which was, you know, he thought it was funny. I didn't think it was that funny, but okay, you know, he was signing some of the paychecks. They hand me two already written scripts of a character called the Black Bomber, created by two very decent men who just didn't get what they were doing. They were basically trying to do a comic book version of the Watermelon Man, that starred Godfrey Cambridge back in the 70s. All you younger people, look it up on Internet Movie Database. You'll find out about the movie. The Black Bomber was a white racist who took part in camouflage experiments in Vietnam to enable him to blend into the jungle better. They had no effect on him while he was in Vietnam, but when he returned home, was stateside, in times of stress, he would turn into the Incredible Negro. And he never knew, the white racist never knew that he turned into a black superhero. The black superhero never knew that he turned into a white racist. Each of them had girlfriends who would witness this transformation and somehow never brought it up.
Wait a minute, he had a girlfriend,
both identities had girlfriends.
Yes, I do.
And they didn't, you know, they never caught, you know, they never said, hey, do you know you turn into a white guy sometimes? Or do you know you turn into a black guy?
This was DC Comics' idea, their first black superhero.
Yeah.
This is why I've been dead at the Tony forever. I drew Black Lightning. I designed his costume with Tony and Jack. But Tony is the guy that created the first black superhero for DC Comics.
So they give me these two scripts, and I'm reading them, and I'm horrified by them. Somebody had done some sort of sketch of the character, and he was wearing a basketball uniform. In each of these two stories, the white racist, as the white racist, rescues somebody he can't see clearly, and then gets all pissed because he risked his life to rescue a black person. In fact, in one of the issues, it's a baby in a baby carriage, and when he sees that he risked his life to save this child, and sees it's a black child, honest to God, may lightning strike me twice if I'm lying, he says, you mean I risked my life for a jungle bunny?
That was DC Comics, I think.
I read them. Before they gave them here. And I said, you can't publish these. These are horrible.
So they hand me the scripts. They hand me the scripts and say, we'd like you to punch these up a little bit and then take over the book with the third issue. And I read them and I go, no. And he went, what do you mean no? I said, I won't do this. Why? I said, you should not publish these comic books. These are the most offensive scripts I have ever read. If you publish this comic book, people will come to your offices with pitchforks and torches. And you go, well, how could you know that? I'll be leading them.
You know, because you did first black writer.
Yeah, because I was... Actually, there's a book, and I'll segue for... There was a book called Comic Book Nation, which was about relevance in comics. And in the very first edition of this book, they did identify me as one of the few African-American writers in comics. I wish I could have seen the author's face when they said, you know, he's white.
Yeah, I just want to say, because I'm from Guyana, like I said. I'm Guyanese American. I became a citizen in 2014, 2 years ago. But all this time, I'm DC Comics' first black artist, and I'm their first African American artist. I've never been to Africa. I don't even like the term African American, because it's color coded, it just means black, all right? I'm not from Africa, all black guys aren't from Africa, and it bothered me for a long time that I was being considered African-American. This is a racist term, in my opinion. But just getting to what Tony was saying about that stereotypical thinking that we deal with, you know, creative people, management, it all is accurate.
Well, now, I will, you know...
Let me tell you a really quick story, because all along those lines. Because you're talking about creative management, because there was a difference back then. I remember one time, and it was shortly after you were working. Remember, I think Ebony Magazine interviewed you? You remember that?
Yeah, right.
Well, they called us and they said, we'd like to interview the black artists that are working for you. Of course, well, Trevor, of course. Do you have any others? And I remember Bob and Marcus and I were sitting there going, we do, but we couldn't remember who they were. We knew who they, we knew their names. We go, was he black? We couldn't remember. We didn't know because we never looked at their color. We looked at their work and we never, we just didn't know. We didn't care.
Yeah, technically, I mean, I'm from, like I said, I'm from South America, so I don't know if technically I'm supposed to be black. But I, DC's first black artist, I was the youngest artist they ever hired. I think that record still holds. Yeah. I was their first black artist, and I co-created the first black superhero. And I became black 2 years ago. I actually, just on a side note, I decided not to become a citizen until I earned it. So I wrote a book called The Original Johnson 2 years ago, and after I wrote that book, I decided I've earned my right to become a citizen, so that's why I became one. Just wanted to mention that. It's a book about Jack Johnson, the first
terrific
black
book.
Terrific champion book. Of the world. If you look him up, you'd love him, Jack Johnson. Ken Burns wrote did a documentary about him called Unforgivable Blackness. He was the first black heavyweight champion in the world in the 1900s, and this was back when racism was legal. All right, you get shot for looking at a white woman. Jack Johnson, who was son of a slave, and back then boxing was like on the lowest rung of the social ladder. It's not even that much better now. But I mean, this guy was a son of a slave, an ignorant savage in a boxing arena. And at the end of his life, he became the first black heavyweight champion of the world. He married three white women. They were all loyal to him. And this guy, when he presented himself in public, he spoke three languages, self-taught. Most black people today can barely speak English, all right? This 1908, over 100 years ago, as I said, back then you couldn't look at a white woman without getting shot. This guy was the most famous black man in the world. And he, even his enemies, agreed on one thing. Jack Johnson was completely fearless. Alright? And Jack Johnson epitomizes what I've said before about loving yourself and designing your world. Because I read both of his autobiographies, and the thing I noticed about Jack is he never referred to himself as black. He always referred to himself as a human being. You alright? At the end of his autobiography, and the reason I decided to write him a book about him, he ended his autobiography in this sentence. In his life, the most famous black man in the world, before Jack Johnson, black men were all eunuchs. Black women were all tramps and whores, all right? We were the lowest of the low. People nowadays can't imagine it. So the racism that black people face nowadays, nothing compared to what Jack Johnson faced back then. And Jack Johnson was as black as midnight. He wasn't light-skinned like me. So this guy had everything against him. And if you look at any picture of Jack Johnson, look to Google, you will see a man, and you will see a smile that belongs in the 21st century. Not 1908, because Jack Johnson had no hatred, he had no anger, he had no bitterness, he had nothing but love and happiness in his life to give, and he worked like a dog, and he stayed true to who he was, and now he, in history, is the only black man to have ever single-handedly conquered racist white America, back when it was officially racist, all right? So this man, Jack Johnson, I wrote the book about him. It's called The Original Johnson, because I wanted people, my people especially, because black people, I know they got heroes and they're all inherited, excuse my language, but I'm pissed off about this idea. Excuse my language. But again, that's the whole thing. There are people who are alive, who have lived, who have left their mark in history that you don't know about, all right, that can inspire you to become the people you want to be, people that can help you make your dreams come true. All you gotta do is find out about them. All right? And in this instance, in this country, if they're black, you gotta work extra hard to find out about them, which is why I wrote my book, so people know about it. And which I'm telling you now, look at Google, Jack Johnson, just look at a picture of this man smiling, and tell me if that's a man that belongs to that century or ours. Sure. And the point is, we haven't caught up to him yet.
You have a solo panel this weekend too, don't you? Aren't you doing being interviewed later or tomorrow by?
I don't know.
I think he's going with my Mike Barr.
I just want to kind of swing this back to Black Lightning, since we're celebrating 40 years.
No, I just wanted to say that when I wrote that book about Jack Johnson, who was a real-life superhero, that's when I felt I earned the right to be a citizen in this country. You see? So, 2014, I became a citizen. I wrote my book in 2008. It was published in 2009 and 2011 in two parts. And 3 years after that, I decided to become a citizen. So I feel like I've earned my citizenship because I wrote about this real black superhero at the end of my DC career. At the beginning of my DC career, I was associated with this fictional black superhero. Fictional to real. But they're both black superheroes, and all superheroes have the same purpose, to inspire you to become a superhero yourself. That's all it's about.
It was very important to me when I, you know, basically after I convinced them not to publish The Black Bomber, by basically asking the question, do you really want your first major black superhero to be a white racist? They gave me like 3 weeks to create a new character. And you know, you can ask me questions about this all weekend. I'll tell you the process that came up with Black Lightning. Basically, Jefferson Pierce was created first. And the superpower part was like the last thing I came up with the character.
Was he always a school teacher?
Yeah, he was always a school teacher.
That's what I love about
him. Which was, you know, I wanted a profession that the younger readers could all relate to. I didn't want an ex-con. I didn't even want a scientist. I wanted somebody that younger readers could relate to, and everybody knew a teacher. And the idea of him coming back to his old high school, I stole that from Welcome Back, Kotter.
By the way, I was mentioning to Tony, what you should do, since you're writing a new Black Lightning series, he should bring back the Black Bomber as a villain in a new series. I think that'd be great.
It could have. I mean, if the series sells well, if the TV series does well, if the comic books do well, then you know, there'll be a lot more Black Lightning, and while I'm able, I will write Black Lightning. But I have to say, it was really important to me to have a black artist on Black Lightning, because although there have always been black creators in comics, E.B. Stoner, who had work in Action Comics number 1, was an African American artist and writer. Because as we said, we didn't really look at the color. At least, you know, the good people in comics never looked at the color of an artist's, you know, skin. We looked at what they could do, what a writer could do, what an artist could do. So it's always been important to me, since I'm clearly not black, to have a black artist. It's true. So it's always been important to me to have, you know, a black artist on the book. Also because a lot of comic artists just draw the same face over and over again. Everybody in their comics look related. And I felt we'd get more authenticity with a black artist who could draw different types of people. If I'm hoping, as the Black Lightning ride goes, and the more successful it is, the more clout I'll have. I've already said that when it comes to the point where I can't write Black Lightning, I'd like to choose my successor, and I'd want that successor to be a person of color. If all of my wild dreams come true, I may be collaborating with some other writers down the road. And again, it will be a way of my following my lifelong commitment to diversity in comics and expanding that even more. Trying to think. You guys just want to open it up to questions, and then if they don't...
Just one thing I wanted to mention about being the editor, editing that comic book. All your commitments that you said were very good, but one of the commitments you don't mention very often, which I thought was good, was that when he did Black Lightning, he wanted to make sure that Black Lightning, the character, was infused into the DC universe. So one of the things that I really liked him doing, he put him in Metropolis. It's in Superman's. And so we started using Superman characters in the story. Jimmy Olsen is there, and of course Superman shows up by the issue four. But other characters that that were being unused or underused by DC, like I think we had Inspector Henderson.
Inspector Henderson,
the show,
who will be in the TV series.
Okay, and a bunch of other characters like that. And I thought that, as an editor, that was the most fun, to be able to weave him into the continuity that was already there. And things like that.
Well, Lynn Stewart, I called Lynn Stewart Lynn Stewart because I figured that maybe somewhere down the line it was revealed that she was related to John Stewart, who was the Black Green Lantern at the time. No. But one of the things I like... One of the few problems I have with editors is when they want to know too much. You know, they want to put too much in an issue or give too much background to a character, and like once you do that, you're locked in. I have a character come in Black Lightning, Detective Denise Sims. She's a gay police detective, the partner of Jefferson Pierce's lifelong friend, Tommy Colavito. It's Tommy with an I this time. And you know, there's a scene where They're throwing something. I won't get it. Comes up in the fourth issue, and she says something like, Black Lightning asks her how her throwing arm is, and her response is, "I throw like a girl who was captain of the CBD baseball team." And my editors, in one of the few false notes they've ever given me, which I talked them out of, was, "Well, that seems to come out of nowhere. Can't we explain that she was a college athlete or something like that?" And I'm going, no, because once I do that, I'm locked into that with the character. I will tell you in a script everything you need to know to enjoy that story, but I'm not gonna go into the nuts and bolts of, you know, Black Lightning, his voltage is XXX, or he can actually lift, you know, 300 pounds. I'm not going to give you any of that crap. Because number one, it would lock me in, and number two, I find that boring. I really do. There are people who are so in love with minute details and continuity, and I'm not one of those people. I'd rather stay true to the character and his core values than basically do the equivalent of a Marvel handbook or a DC Who's Who in the middle of a story. I'm not giving you facts. I'm not giving you an origin. I'm giving you a story. But again, this is, you know, one of the things I don't like to tell you everything, because once I tell you something in a story, there it is, and I have to deal with it. And I'd rather not deal with it unless I have a really good idea for it. There are things even in that first issue of Black Lightning that might look like they're just thrown in there, but they'll have payoffs later on in this series. But Jack was my editor on Black Lightning, one of my favorite editors. There are kind of two kinds of editors, three kinds. There's on the bottom end. There's editors who want you to write their stories, who would turn you into a typist. Then there's a guy, and this is mostly who I've dealt with, and Jack was this way to a small extent, who just figured, oh, Tony's been doing this, we'll just let him do whatever he wants. Sometimes they phrase it as, Tony's crazy, you know, just let him do what he wants. And then you have an editor who Jack is more of this type. He doesn't want Tony Isabella to write Jack Harris's story. He wants Tony Isabella to write the best Tony Isabella story he can. And I've been fortunate. I've worked with about a half a dozen editors like that. But they are rare, and I treasure working with Jack. We've known each other now. I've been friends
with him. I agree, and I also wanted to mention what I said about Jack being one of the nicest guys I've ever met. Because he paid me a compliment that I still remember. It's true. I don't know you, man. When I was 16, 17, Jack is one of the most encouraging people. Because I remember he told me that your work is good, it's going to get better, but one day you're going to have a legion of fans. And I remember that phrase, I never forget it. I never thought it would be true. But just the fact that Jack said that really just encouraged me to, as I said, just be the best person I can be. One thing I want to mention that Tony hasn't touched on, especially concerning DC's first black character, is the idea of racism. Because Tony got, you know, referred to as their black writer. I was a black artist for 25 years. No matter what I did, I was always a black artist. And this is not a good thing. Because, as I said, Jack was one of the few people who encouraged me as a person, not as a black artist. Just, you know, you're good, you're going to get better, but we believe in you. And that's very rare in this business. There's a lot of cynicism and there's a lot of negativity in the creators of comics. I hope that's changed. But in my day, it was very rife. I didn't consider myself black back then. As I said, I was from South America. America was a new experience to me. Getting this job was a dream come true, but it was also an American thing. I'm still South American learning about this culture. So one, I didn't think of myself as black. I had to learn about black people. I was DC Comics' first black artist. I had to learn about black people so I could do my job. What I learned was not good. But which is why every time I get the chance to speak to the public, it's important to me that people who are in comics know their own strengths. I'm sick and tired of hearing people refer to themselves as geeks and nerds or anything negative. Look, comic books have brought, they're some of the most cherished memories of my entire life. And I'm not a stupid person, I'm an A student. I read literature. I love comics. Because comics keep your dreams alive. And if you consider yourself a geek or a nerd, you're disparaging something that should be precious, that's something that you should cherish. Comics is childhood. So how could you not love your childhood? I had a wonderful childhood. No matter what happens to me in the future, I got memories that'll persevere. So nothing can bother me, because I have a happy life, I have a happy past. Whatever the future holds, I can handle it. And it's all because I do not define myself by any labels. Any external labels. It's very important. African American, black, white, whatever. You gotta be human. And you gotta be a human being before you can be a hero, before you can be a superhero. You gotta be human. And there's only one thing you need to be human, and that's compassion. Alright? Because if you don't feel for someone else, if you can't feel who you are, if you can't love who you are, no matter what you look like, no matter what you do for a living, no matter what your circumstance, if you can't love the person you're with, then you have nothing valuable to give to the world. And as an artist, as a comic book artist, as a human being who's happy and like to see other people happy, that's the only thing I really want to tell you. Do not define yourself or your happiness by anybody else's labels. You've got to, if you're an adult, if you're 18, if you want to have self-respect, you got to take charge of your life. You got to be who you are and have the guts to be that. An important thing to remember, life is a learning experience. When you're 92, you still got something you can learn. Everybody in this room can teach me something I don't know. Every single human being has a seed of humanity within them. So if you respect yourself, if you respect humanity, you've got to love. You've got to love. People nowadays want to hate, but hate is the exact opposite of creation. Hate does nothing but destroy. Hate destroys the hater as well as the object. All right? You can be jealous of somebody that inspires you to be better. You can be angry in a social situation that gives you energy to fight it. Even fear. Fear can be energy. The greatest actors can tell you about stage fright. The greatest performances in the theater were preceded by the worst stage fright. You know, a great actor up there, before the curtain rises, he's going to curl up in a fetal ball because he knows what he has to do. The curtain rises, he steps to the plate, and he is who he or she is, who they are, what they have to give the world. All right? So my point is, just because I'm up here, I'm an artist, and I get, you know, whatever fame or whatever fortune you think I have, that's immaterial. The thing is, we all have one thing in common, black, white, red, brown, or whatever. We're all human beings. And your artists are supposed to, your artist heroes are supposed to inspire you to be the best person you can be. Because if you want to be an adult, if you want to take charge of your life, if you want to enjoy your life, you got to to do two things. The first thing is know yourself. All right? And the second thing is will happen from there. Because once you know yourself, you'll know what you want. But it's vitally important that you know yourself. That's why I'm 58 years old. I've been in comics for 41 years. I've been working for DC for 25 years. And as I said, my entire life is a journey. It's all a learning experience. Everything I've learned, I can share. And everything I can learn, I will share. But that's all it's about. It's about enjoying your life, yourself, and sharing that with others. It ain't about being famous and rich. It's about being happy. All right? So it doesn't matter what you do, enjoy your life and yourself. Go to sleep feeling good about what you did that day, and you're a happy person.
When I was your editor, I never worried about being covered up. I did worry about the fact you were only 16 years old. That bothered me.
Well, so did I. That's the thing that I worried about.
And I remember one incident along those lines. I had Tony's script, and I gave it to Trevor, and he read it over. And in the first panel, I think it's like issue 3 or 4, I forget what it was. But the first panel is a close-up of someone holding a clipboard with something on it. I forget exactly what it was. Trevor came to me and goes, "What's a clipboard?" He didn't know what a clipboard was. I had to go find him one and show it to him so he knew what it was. Now, I don't know if that was because he was only 16 or because he was from South America.
I live a very sheltered life. I enjoy my own company. I like to read. I like to exercise. I like people, but I don't really need them. I find I don't need people to support me in any way, but I do like people. Being around nice people, it's a wonderful experience. As I said, it gives you those memories that are ammunition for the future when you need them. But basically, no matter where I am, no matter what I do, I'm happy, because I'm me. I'm alive.
You know what a clipboard is now? You know what a clipboard is now?
This is what I was going to say. I mean, there's so much I don't know that I didn't know. And that's the whole thing, man. It's about learning.
Learning, you know, I have a joke that usually goes over big, in which I tell people that I'm so woke I have insomnia. But the fact of the matter is, I keep learning. I never stop learning. I read things that will help me. I talk to people. Learning. Continuing to learn is one of the most important aspects of creating stories and art.
This is one of the things I love about Black Lightning, is that he's a superhero, that he's a teacher. I love teachers.
Talking about the editing of this, one of the biggest problems I had with editing, and this is not just with Black Lightning, with every book, was deadlines. You know, you had to have things done on time. There was a printing schedule that you had to meet. Otherwise, there were additional costs, which, of course, the upper echelon did not want to incur. So had to be undeadlined. Tony was terrible with deadlines. Always late. But it didn't matter, because I knew the reason Tony was late is because he was trying to make it the best story as possible. Good. And I also knew this. I knew that if he sent me a script in 2 weeks late, it didn't matter. Because I didn't have to spend a week editing it. I spent an hour at the most reading it, and I didn't have to edit it much. So whatever time we might have lost because he took his time with the story, we could gain because I could immediately send it off to Trevor without having to
Jack
wait.
Jack is an editor who treats his artists like people rather than commodities.
Right, I mean, that is the bug. They would sit there and yell at me and say, "Tell Tony's late." I said, "Well, it's okay." I had to do that a lot.
Yeah.
But it didn't matter because I knew
I've gotten better.
And the book, by the way, never shipped late.
No.
Ever.
No.
You know,
We had a good team. A few years back I did a 6-issue series called Grim Ghost, and I was writing, Kelly Jones was drawing, and we had editors of the type that thought they were Hollywood executives. I mean, they'd hold meetings to go over the script. And it's like, no, I don't need craft services telling me, you know, how to fix my story. And I finally did. I quit the book twice an issue. And finally they gave up. And, you know, because it's me and Kelly Jones, okay? We know how to make a comic book. And we were the only one of their titles that shipped on time. Because we just told them, shut up, we're just doing this. We're getting close. We're at 12:45.
I just want to say, to reiterate a point, Jack, it's been 40 years, and I always wanted to tell you, that compliment you gave me, the support you gave me in my beginning of my career, lasts to this day.
I know it worked.
I've always appreciated that.
I haven't seen Trevor, by the way, in about 35 years.
Yeah. Yes. This is like a big deal. This is the first time the three of us have been at a convention together.
It's the first time we've ever been in the same room together. And at the same time.
Well, no, back at D.C.
No, you were off... We never met together, all of us, at the same time.
Yes, we did. When we worked on the costume, we were all together.
No, you guys worked on the costume. Yes. The sketches. This is the first time we did that.
After this convention, I've been given orders to escort these gentlemen over to the CW booth, which is where, you know, Black Lightning will be airing on the CW. They want to do a group photo with us. A group photo with us. And then they have gifts for you guys.
I can work.
It won't take long.
Questions?
It's just going to take a photo, and so that'll be a chance for you guys to take a photo as well. But we got a few minutes left, so
questions.
Yes.
You said that you threw out all the previous continuity of Black Lightning. Are his daughters going to make their way back into the new story?
He's 28 years old in the new series, so he's never been married, so he doesn't have daughters, but he does have cousins.
Okay.
I was basically told I could take whatever I like, and although I wasn't wild about the daughters in the comic books themselves, in the DC cartoon shorts that used to air on Saturday, and then what I've seen of the daughters from the TV series, I've fallen in love with them. So they're not, we don't have his daughters, but we do have his cousins. He's got a real family in the series this time, which he's never had before. He always kind of built a family around himself. Now he's got family when the story opens. Yes?
I was wondering, is this going to go back to them with the Outsiders? A little bit of Black Lightning's origins in there?
There's no origin story in the 6-issue series. My take on Batman and the Outsiders, as much as I enjoyed the book, is that in my new Crypt continuity, Black Lightning worked for Batman, with Batman for maybe a hot minute, and didn't much like it. On my watch, you will never again see Black Lightning being subservient to Batman, Superman, or anyone else.
He's his own character.
He's his own guy.
I liked how I got on there for like the last couple of seconds for
that. Yeah, you got the last question of the panel.
Yeah.
You got the last word.
I did, and I thought that was pretty cool. But since he was saying how he's not going to have any origins from the Outsiders from Batman, this is going to be his own main book, and that's what we're going to get into next, actually,
exactly.
Is Black Lightning.
Now, the panel, I was kind of hoping Trevor Von Eaton had some awesome stories and stuff.
He has some great stories. I really related to him on a lot of the stuff he was talking about.
The only thing I had was I was hoping they could get more into actually even more Black Lightning stuff.
Mm-hmm. I was hoping so too. I feel like if
this was, there was some great stories. Like, dude, imagine if DC had pushed that Black Bomber storyline.
I don't think those might be some things that DC would not be able to recover from. They'd just be in the shoot, the poop shoot.
Yeah. The
but the girl that was actually had the other question before I did on here, she was saying he would have been great on TED Talks too.
Yes. Trevor Von Eaton, a panel all of it just about him and his story coming up and getting through comics and stuff would make a great story.
Yeah, it would. All of those guys, also, as they said, that was their first time in a room together.
Yeah, that was kind
all
of amusing.
All three of them.
Interesting to hear that even writing the book and stuff, that's standard anyway, especially now.
Yeah.
But to hear it even back then, the fact that they weren't working together in the same office.
Because now you'll send it to somebody, they send it to someone, they talk to someone else, you don't actually see anybody.
You can actually be a comic writer for either Marvel or DC
and
actually not be in the same city as everybody else.
Exactly, and as we were saying, that's how a lot of podcasters do too.
Mm-hmm.
They just hook up through the internet and do a lot of Skyping stuff.
Well,
we were doing
that. I do it with some of my shows. Wookie Radio, I'm in Akron, Ohio. Derek's out in Boston area, somewhere in there, and Mike is down in Orlando somewhere.
Yeah, you guys are all over the place. And that's what a lot of them do for the comic book stuff. They never meet each other. If they do, it's going to be maybe at like a little party or something, or a convention.
Well, comic cons is how the creators sometimes meet each other.
Mm-hmm. That's what we got a lot of from hearing a couple of the guys we interviewed.
Yeah. So, but let's go. The interesting thing is, we just did that Black Lightning panel, and this week we actually have for review Black Lightning, Cold Dead Hands, number one, Tony Isabella actually is the writer on, and yep, the book that he actually talked about during that panel.
Mm-hmm.
So go ahead, Vern. You got the book sitting in front of you there.
Yes, I do. Just going to do a quick little overview of this. Basically, and they are in Cleveland. This is Cleveland News, and it's a couple people looking on their phone. Of course they will.
I'm kind of hoping that as this goes along, they may be able to slip in some of the some of the Cleveland Skyline staples.
Yeah, I'm waiting for that.
Like, at least, just if nothing else, just have the Terminal Tower.
Yeah, I was waiting to see some of
the federal
that
courthouse. It's the new federal courthouse in Cleveland, or the Key Bank Tower that they have.
Yeah, because the best thing about seeing stuff that you know from your city, you're like, are they going to reference this?
Are you going to recognize that?
Yeah.
We do get the Cleveland Indians, I think, referenced in here. They talk about Indians ball game letting out or something like that.
They didn't mention the Browns. Don't hate me, guys.
What?
What? Huh?
What about the Browns?
Nothing.
There's nothing wrong with the Browns. They can't figure out how to win a ball game, but there's nothing wrong with the Browns.
Anyways, they're on their phones, everybody, looking at this news that's breaking news. It's these, they're calling them, I'm trying to think, where are they? They're calling them the Weathermen, and they have these weather-induced guns. They remind me a little bit of the Weather Wizard, but they are shooting out thunder from their guns. But it turns out there's a lightning blast that hits one of these thugs' guns, and it's Black Lightning, and he jumps into action. And so he's the new vigilante of Cleveland.
He's just, at this point, he's just moved into Cleveland, I believe.
Yeah, so they're like, who the heck is this guy? Who's this new guy in tights jacking our stuff? Well, Jefferson Pierce, is, as everybody knows, he's a struggling struggling one for him to be home because he has to take down these troublemakers, but he's really a teacher.
Yeah.
That's his main focus, and he doesn't really want to do the whole superhero life because he just wants to. He's doing it because he feels like he needs to make the city better.
Well, like
I feel like that's like every superhero's
Tony
problem.
Was saying in the panel that this is Black Lightning. This is the character we know, even though the circumstances around him have changed.
Yes.
But this is still character-wise the same guy.
Yes. And I can definitely tell a lot of the stuff that I'm reading here. And I'm waiting for the TV show will give a lot of that, too.
Yeah. I did hear a little birdie at Comic-Con somewhere. It wasn't from Trevor. It was actually talking to some other people that had overheard it or something. But according to, I think Black Lightning may be coming a little later than we thought. I heard something about possibly March.
Okay. I can deal with that.
This didn't come from Tony or any of the guys that actually did Black Lightning here. Mm-hmm. But I heard it was, but don't quote me on that. Because that it was, I heard this, who heard it from this, who heard it from this, who heard it from this.
I know a guy that knew a guy that said this from another guy.
That's right. So, but it looks like we may be getting the series in March.
Okay, well, as long as we're getting the series this year or next year, I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
So he's taking down the thugs. Of course, they hit him, but he bounces back. But they say, okay, if you can take something from us, we'll hurt you in a different way. So they hit a building and they try to blow that up top, so everything crumbles
the
to the bottom.
Casino.
There you go. See, I haven't been there yet.
No, that doesn't. There's not.
It's not. What's the casino?
The casino in Cleveland, Horseshoe.
Horseshoe. I don't do anything about gambling, so I literally don't. I don't know the name.
Casino's been there
what
5 years now.
Yeah,
I've never been.
My
there.
Mom's been out there. I haven't been there.
I've not even been to the Hard Rock Roxy, you know, that they have here.
I haven't been there in so long. I've been there before though.
They have concerts. They have some great bands coming through there for concerts. I still haven't been up there.
Last year or 2 years ago, Yellow Wolf and Rich were up there, and I was so upset because I missed it. I didn't have the money for it at the time, but. Hey, there's always this year, so or next year.
Well, I know. I think Styx is either coming or they just came through there.
There's a lot
of guys like Bret Michaels goes through there. It's a lot of the since I grew up in the 80s and early 90s.
Yeah.
I like a lot of the hair bands and stuff. So yeah. A lot of those guys that are still touring the late 70s, early 80s bands
go see them.
Go through there.
I mean, I like a lot of the 80s guys too, but for money wise, since I wasn't in the era, I'm probably not going to pay. I'll just listen to their music. But so he stops the sign from falling on the civilians. He actually lets it fall on him, and it falls in a cop car. But once he gets up, the cops say freeze, and he's like, "Really? I just helped you guys out, and you're gonna want to take me to jail?"
So that's a strong thing in this book. That according to this book, Cleveland doesn't want a vigilante.
No, they do not.
Or at least the police force doesn't want a vigilante in their town.
Yeah, this kind of reminds me of what they do on the Arrow show. It's like, hey, this crime's happening, but we don't want vigilantes. It's like, well, he's helping the police officers.
Well, the interesting thing is we see during this when he's stopping the metal from falling and stuff. Not only does he control lightning, he controls electricity in general. So electromagnetism and things like that are all part of that.
And that's one reason why bullets will just bounce off of him.
Yeah, he has a force field that he can make.
And that's what he basically tells the cops. He's like, look, this was gravity that caused the damage to your cars, not me. So, sorry, I didn't mean to destroy them, but you're welcome. And he walks away. Now we see him, he's back in school, or he's not back in school yet, he's at his house, he's preparing himself, I think this was for his father's funeral, if I'm correct, and he's talking to his dad this whole time, monologuing how he says he misses him, and all he wanted to do was just sit back and relax for the weekend, but he couldn't do it because he had to stop those thugs, but he says, Dad, I just basically kind of want to be like you, just always want to help somebody.
Yeah.
And then this is where we go to see Tobias Whale, and he has his secretary here, I guess you would call her, brings his sister in. And she flew all the way out of town. Where did she fly from? Do they even say?
I don't remember where she flew in from.
Yeah, I don't see either. But she arrived to Cleveland. She says, why would I want to be in a crappy city like this and fly out here? I'm like, hey, don't talk about us.
That's right.
But she says she didn't want to be in this godforsaken town. And where's my son? He says, oh, your son. Yeah, him. I killed him. She's like, you did what? He said, I spent decades hiding my identity. Only a handful of people know who I really am and what I do. He was going to out me because he was mad over something I did or didn't want him to help me with, so I had to kill him. And then she starts fighting over, she starts yelling at him and saying, how dare you do that? All this shadow figure stuff you do, no one really cares who you are because one day you're still going to get caught for this because I'm going to tell who you are because you killed my son. And he just picks up his trophy. My goodness. It's like a, what do you call it? It's like a
build like a tugboat almost.
Yeah.
Or a, whaling ship.
Yeah.
Actually, it's probably a whaling ship since it's Tobias Whale.
Thank you, Ken. I wouldn't have never got that. He has this figure on his dresser of a whaling ship, you said?
Yeah.
He hits his sister in the head with it, right in the eyeball, cracks her skull, and now he killed his sister. And he's like, hey, clean that up.
Yeah, this guy's a cold,
hard
cold
killer.
Dude.
I mean, he killed his nephew and his sister, and he just tells his secretary, call somebody to clean this up.
Now, I'm wondering with the TV series if Whale is going to be like
this
cold,
hard
what
killer.
Whale is going to be.
From what I know, Whale in the previous comic books, in the cartoons, he wasn't anybody good. I mean, he just was a scumbag. Sorry, he was a bad guy. But this solidifies if
almost,
you kill your family, take him out.
Is he almost on the level of like a kingpin?
I before you said I was thinking that too.
Size wise, he looks similar to Kingpin, but
I don't think Kingpin was
big of an empire as Kingpin does.
Yeah, I don't think Kingpin was that brutal to his own family. Not unless they really gave him a reason to do so. He loved his wife. He loved his son. Even if he went to jail, he still loved him. His dad was a different story, though. But his dad was a piece of crap. Anyways, let's go back to Black Lightning. Now they're at his father's funeral, Black Lightning's father's funeral.
Yeah, Jefferson's dad.
And he actually was the first black man to work at the company for getting out the scoops and stories. He worked for a newsletter.
What newspaper was it? Let me see what they call the newspaper.
They say back in the newspaper... Just getting the scoops. They don't actually say what the name was he worked for.
Yeah, but he was the first black man to work for that newspaper. And they wouldn't trust, and as Nate says right on here, at that time, the newspaper would not trust a black man with one of their company cars.
Nope.
So he went and bought a motorcycle.
Yep, which his mother hated, but she also favorite picture of him was him on that motorcycle.
Yeah.
And now I was trying to look up these characters' names because I don't remember them from the top of my head. But his friend is here, and she works for the police department. It looks like there's another detective there.
And I believe she's a character that's been in the books before. But
so is this supposed
she
to be
was,
like...
She was gender-swapped in this.
And is that what he was saying, how this is something like his family members more so, but they're not going to be his direct daughters, but it's going to be like
possibly
a cousin or a best friend that's like family? If you find her name, let me know. But she says...
Let me look.
She says, they're talking about Black Lightning, and the other detective there is talking about, yeah, he doesn't think he's suited for this. And then she says, yes, Sparky. He's like, Sparky? He's like, when did you come up with that name? But then they start hearing news on the radio saying that they're coming back again. Those guys are downtown. They're causing more ruckus. So she's like, I gotta go because she's the – what is she? She is a very high up part into the
– She's the lieutenant,
department.
I believe.
She's lieutenant. So she has to be there. And then he leaves, too. And then she goes out to his car, and he's pulling out his costume from his trunk. And he's putting his costume on. She says, why don't you just always wear that underneath your stuff so you can just take it off and jump into action?
Yeah.
He said, if you really want me to do that, I'm going to be stinking really bad, and you wouldn't want to be around me. My armpits, they're a mess.
Yeah. Well, she's his best friend in general.
Yeah.
At all.
So now they hug each other, and she says, "Be careful, brother from another mother." And he says, "Back at you, sister from another mister." And they both head out to take care of the bad
That's
guys.
That's it. It's Tommy Calavito.
Tommy Calavito?
Yeah.
Okay.
And if I remember right, Tommy was a guy before.
Didn't he say that, actually?
I think so, because
he says Tommy with an I now.
They've yeah, it's Tommy with an I now, and if I remember right, she's a gay character, but they're not going to make a big deal about it, which
right.
is the way you should do it.
See, this is why, guys, you got to come to those panels when you're getting those interviews. You get to hear from the creator's mouth. But they both drive off.
Oh, no, she's just Detective Calavito. She's not a lieutenant.
Okay. She seems like she has orders over everybody, though.
Well, yeah. Well, detectives outrank patrolmen and just
the
SWAT
team.
Guys.
Oh, and the SWAT. I didn't know for the SWAT guys.
Yeah.
Well, that's what happens once they arrive on the scene. The SWAT team's ready to take these guys down, and she's like, "Hey, don't. No, you're not getting none of this through there." And he's basically trying to overshadow her orders, and she's like, "Just be. You can be a butthole sometimes," she says, "but you're a good officer, so I'm going to excuse you being a jerk right now. Just obey my orders." He just says, "Yes, ma'am."
Yeah.
So now these guys, if the what are they called, the cloudmen, they're or weathermen, they're ready to take down everything. They're really waiting for Black Lightning. This is a setup for Black Lightning. They want to get this vigilante out of there.
Well, yeah, because Whale wants him gone.
Yes. Well, Black Lightning, before they know it, the SWAT team's like, "Man, we can't get a good shot. They're everywhere." Then Black Lightning comes up behind them and says, "Here you go." He's like, how did you do that? He said, "I went to Batman School 101. I thought that was a good reference.
Well, there's other references. Like when he was putting on his suit, he was talking about how the Flash keeps his in
a
he
ring.
Heard that the Flash keeps it in his ring.
He's like, "I don't believe that." But he's the Flash. He can, you know, fold it up real quicker than we can. So I believe it. But he takes them down, and then now the SWAT team wants to shoot him. He's like, "Let me get this straight. One, bullets bounce off me, or two, I can either watch your back and save your," and before he can finish, then they start shooting them with the lightning blast and thunder blast.
Yeah, someone hits them with a huge amount of lightning.
Yeah, and he says, "See, this is what I was talking about." And then he throws like this ball of lightning on the ground, and it messes up all their guns and electrocutes them, but not to kill them, just to stun them. And now
where are
they're
at? Okay, yeah. You're not as far ahead as I am. Okay.
You're a little farther. And then they get on the ground, and the SWAT teams tell them to drop your weapons, raise your hands. He even raises his hands, even though he really hasn't done anything bad or illegal. Well, I guess being a vigilante is illegal, but at least he's helping you guys out. And as they're on the ground, you see, was this Miss, what's her name, Miss Picard? Miss Picard?
I don't remember.
This is Whale's secretary. And
Picard?
Picard, Miss Picard. She's getting a call from Tobias Whale saying, "Hey, the phase of testing's over. Now it's ready to show them what we're really about." And so she presses a button, and that actually sets off all the thugs' guns and electrocutes them and kills them. And because Black Lightning has lightning abilities, they think this is him.
It looks like Black Lightning just electrocuted the thugs that were already surrendering.
Right. So now they're like, "You're not just a vigilante. You're a murderer, too." And now the jerk SWAT team member start fighting, but of course he takes them down, and then his best friend Tommy tells him, "Look, you gotta get out of here." He said, "I didn't do it." She says, "Look, I know you didn't do it, but nothing you can do now will make it look good. They're seeing you as the bad guy, so don't make me look like I'm working with you." So he hits her, runs away, and they says, "He just killed those people. He's not getting away with it." And she says, "Well, for now, let's just keep the community under control so they don't go nuts." And as he's running down the alleyway, you see Tobias Wells staying up in his big building saying, "I wonder how they like their superhero now." So the next issue is A City Against Him, and this was the first issue of Black Lightning, Cold Dead Hands.
Exactly. Now, we're going to keep reading this story.
Oh,
This is a six-issue miniseries.
Yeah.
We're going to keep reading it, but we may not be reviewing every copy of it.
Mm-hmm. And we do that with most books. Yeah. We usually get the first one, let you guys know what we think. Speaking of which, Dead Man's out, too. That was pretty good. We're not going to talk about that. We can talk about that next week.
We're on Black Lightning right now. Depending on what's going on with the rest. What we have for review next week, there was like 15 books that came out, so we got to figure out what we're going to actually review.
But Dead Man came out again. Before he had, was it like a 6-issue mini run? Now he's having a 12-issue mini run, so who knows? They might. I'm really hoping, because they have Zatanna in the books right now with Batman. They showed her, Constantine and Swamp Thing working together in Hellblazer. Etrigan's getting his own title. Are we going to get...
There's a chance that we're going to get Justice League Dark again.
Yes, because they put all the characters in there so far.
Just like we were saying, that Shazam will hopefully be getting a title soon. They're supposed to still be working on a Justice League Dark movie. And if they do that, you know you'll see the Justice League Dark in books at some point.
What's the chance of Brian Michael Bendis working on a Justice League Dark title?
Possibly. I don't see him stepping in and going to a title like that.
Okay.
I think first off, they're going to try to put him in something that's bigger. A big, high-profile title, which would be your Justice League, mm-hmm. maybe Shazam,
mm-hmm.
Maybe Superman, mm-hmm. something maybe like Batman. That. Maybe Batman. It would be a high-profile title.
Yeah. So we'll see. But that was Black Lightning, Cold Dead Hands, and then our next book we're going to get into
is Justice League number 32.
Bat Out of
which
Hell,
is,
Part 2.
Brian Hitch's last book on, or yeah, last run on the title, I believe. Hang on.
Is it,
let me double check it again. No, it was written by Robert Venditti.
Venditti, yeah.
So, yeah, so Brian Hitch is out already.
Yeah, because it was the last one that was.
Last week was his last. He's back next week. That's what it
was.
He's back
on
number 33. Venditti wrote this because it's just. This is part of the metal tie ins.
Mm-hmm. And this, if you guys have been keeping up, we did the Bat Out of Hell for Comic Con Live for The Flash. That was the part one. This is part mm-hmm. two, the next one.
If you remember, Bats Out of Hell Part 1
next one's
ended
a Green Lantern title.
With each of the Justice League members being in the Batcave of their counterpart.
Exactly. And also, Cyborg has been taken in. They're just kind of
except for
experimenting
Cyborg,
on him.
Superman and Batman, remember, are in the Dark
Multiverse.
Multiverse,
yes,
and
being tortured right now. And boy, do they look like they've seen Moses.
Yeah.
they are looking like they are Moses. They got the gray beard. They look like they're aging and dying at the same time.
The interesting thing, though, is the Justice League in this, in Dark Knight's Metal, does not have... It has Hal Jordan back in it right now and not Simon and Jessica.
No. As I always
said before,
Hal Jordan
reading,
is my favorite Lantern.
If you're reading Green Lanterns...
Yeah.
Simon and Jessica are actually off-planet right now.
Exactly.
Trying to save a bunch of little guys that never want to, that don't want to leave their planet as it's being destroyed.
Sounds like a lot of Jessica's problems.
Which this week wrapped that up.
Okay, I haven't read that one. Read the one for this week
yet.
Yeah,
this week wrapped that story up, so next week will be a start of a new story.
But this book starts off, you see Cyborg flashing back to when he was a college student and playing football. He was saying how his legs were the best thing that made him so fast, and that was his hands.
Well, he's saying that everybody else said... His physical abilities are what made him a great player. He's saying, no, it was his brain.
Exactly. I was getting that.
Would sit there and read or watch hours of game footage and not just
study
what
them.
He was doing. Study what the rest of the team is doing.
Like
so
a good athlete.
When it came to being a team, he could help everybody out. No, hey, you missed this little bit here or you did this little thing there.
And he said he was really good at doing that, to work as a team for his team.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how he's seeing what's happening to Justice League right now. You got the Flash, Aquaman, Wonder Woman, and Green Lantern all dismantled in the caves. And he says, my team needs me, the Justice League.
Exactly. Well, they mention that his team's Justice League, yeah. It shows the four there, Flash, Aquaman, Wonder Woman, Green Lantern. The other three that are missing there is Cyborg, which we see is being messed with right now. Superman and Batman are gone. And he even mentions Superman or Batman is lost. Superman's trapped in another universe.
And he says the Justice League team scattered and teleported around who knows where. And they need to level the playing ground. And the best way to do that, we have to win the game.
Exactly.
And now we get to Barry Allen. And this is what's happening to him right now. The Red Death is chasing him everywhere, and we got a little Easter egg there from Jay Garrett.
We did where?
See it? The helmet?
Oh, yes, in the background.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And this is the sand of the new... And this is sand. This isn't just any regular sand.
Yeah, they're chasing, and then Barry thinks he's in quicksand, which actually, no, that is Jay Garrick's helmet, but if you look, then it looks like that maybe in the Flash Museum or something, because you see the statue there.
That'll make sense if this is the Flash Museum.
But here the Red Death has not trapped him in a museum or in sand. He's actually in an hourglass.
Exactly. A one big hourglass. And he also has a souped-up car, something that looks like out of Rocky Raceland.
Yeah, he has his own Red Death Batmobile.
Of course. That's when Flash, like, of course you would make a Flashmobile.
Uh-huh.
Well, since he's going to outrun him, he's saying, I know you're fast, Flash, but I'm a billionaire. You think I just have one car?
Yeah.
One Batmobile? No, he has his he has several Batmobiles. He's got a Bat Cycle, and they're all chasing after Flash, and he's in quicksand. Or not quicksand, but hourglass. So how fast and how long does he have to run until he can outrun those things before he meets his death?
Mm-hmm. Then we find Aquaman that is fighting the Drowned.
And then this is where Cyborg also puts in saying, teams, they can run fast. And here, let me go back real quick. He says, a team member can run fast, but that's... The fastest man alive cannot outrun the other team. Then we have Aquaman, he's time to get angry. His thing for the team is he's the angriest guy. But what happens when the King of the Sea anger stops him from completing his goal? They need the other team members to help him out of that,
mm-hmm.
which they do not have right now.
Well, we get to Aquaman fighting the Drowned. And Aquaman, now, throughout the history of Aquaman, everybody knows he's got a slight problem with anger sometimes.
Yeah, he does. He does.
But you find he's ready. He's talking about how you took my wife from me. The water is my home. Now you're going to feel my rage. And you see the fish kind of dying around him.
Yeah, and if you look at his face, he's bleeding.
Mm-hmm. Well, it says the Drowned tells him, the water, my king, it's poison.
Mm-hmm.
Now, remember, the Drowned has the hydrokinesis, but she can also manipulate the composition
from,
of the water.
From what I got out here, it's not hydrokinesis. It's something different. Yeah, it's literally just the dark water.
Mara has the hydrokinesis.
Exactly.
The Drowned here seems, if I remember right, from the Drowned title, the Drowned actually could control the composition of the water.
Exactly. And
could
that's
make
why
it heavier water, lighter water, change so it had extra hydrogen in it or whatever you needed to do.
And that's why Mira lost that battle, because she's like, as she said, you control water, I create the dark water.
Mm-hmm.
Best way to put it. And that's why now a lot of the stuff that Aquaman is doing, he's getting like poison under there to him, because this water isn't the same that he's used to. And then he says this weird, guys, you gotta see this panel, or this page right here. This is a weird, like,
a giant
sea creature.
Kraken sea creature type
with
thing.
With tentacles and crab legs and like a hammerhead shark.
And Aquaman tries to use his telepathy.
Because it's a sea creature.
And she tells him straight up, she won't respond to your aqua telepathy, Arthur. She sees the way things my way now.
Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh, no.
You don't recognize your love? And here, this, I guess, is actually what the Drowned has done to Mara.
Mm-hmm. So she's transformed her. This is what, and by the way, she can transform any of those creatures underneath her water into what she wants them to be. And Mara is one of the most powerful beings, as we were even talking about.
Yeah.
For getting her own solo title. She's something else. So now as a creature, she's going to just take down Aquaman pretty easy.
Exactly.
But now this is where he says, even if all this anger, he cannot dodge. He cannot drag you into it. The anger can drag you into a dogfight, and when that happens, you need to brawl. And the brawler is the Amazon. Wonder Woman is the one that's always ready to
Wonder
go
Woman,
at it.
And this is the Batcave for the Merciless is actually underneath Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm. This reminds me a lot of the stuff that I've seen from the animated series with the Penny.
Mm-hmm.
But as they're discussing, he's like, Diana, this is why I used to love you. I built all this for you. This was what he wanted for them in his world. And she says, I would never love someone like you that wears an Ares helmet. Ares is the enemy. She would never do that. He said, well, in my world, you did until you tried to take this helmet away from me. And I had to turn into the Merciless. So she says, don't lay any of your dirty hands on me. And he says, that's why I missed about you, Diana, the fight in you. And they start going at it. And so far, it seems she's taking him down pretty good.
Yeah.
And she says, I would die before I ever would be caught with somebody like you.
No, before she would teach someone
or
like him.
Or saying thank you, teach someone. That's what's going on here. He's talking about this fighting skills, how do you like it? She says, where'd you learn that from, a butler? He said, no, you. She says, I would never teach somebody like you.
See, I read this digitally, so I have the book here. I didn't realize the new series Damage is coming in December.
Oh, so that's next month
actually,
already?
It's a spinoff from Metal.
Oh, shoot, so...
And I like that new logo for the new age of DC heroes.
Yeah, it really pops out. And I like the red. We'll talk about that. We got to get on that one
next
week.
That's going to be probably, we're going to have to talk about it some more next week.
Mm-hmm.
So continue on.
She says, well, tell me the truth. He says, I am telling the truth. After I destroyed all the gods and I came for you, your sisters. And when I did do that on Themyscira, it lasted for 3 days, that war did. And he also says the Bruce Wayne penny that he had in his world is a little bit different from the one that her Bruce Wayne has in her world. Well, this penny, when he hits it with his hammer, it brings back all the dead souls of the Amazon sisters.
Well, that's
that he
because
killed.
You saw why, right? In that bottom one, it says the coin he made was actually he took all of the he ordered the ferryman at the River Styx to collect all the coins from every dead Amazon seeking passage.
And melted
he melted
it.
Those coins down and reformed them into a new golden drachma.
Yes. And his face is on the side of this penny, by the way.
Which is why when he hits the drachma, he's able to summon all the dead Amazons.
Mm-hmm. And he says, now, your warrior sisterhood welcome your princess. So he's letting them know, now you're going to have to fight off all these dead Amazon sisters of yours. And Cyborg keeps saying...
Ah, okay. That's why I just saw... I don't get the ads in the digital previews.
Mm-hmm.
But it shows here, because The Flash was written by Joshua Williamson. This one is Robert Venditti. But next week, Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps 32 is also Robert Venditti.
Right.
And then it's wrapped up in part four with Joshua Williamson writing it.
Yeah, and this is all going to come together as one big splash page.
Mm-hmm.
And then this is when Cyborg says, we're losing. What do you do when speed, anger, and the warrior spirit come up short? When your team is scattered all over the playing field, you go with your guts. And there's nobody else better on the Justice League team to go with their guts than Hal Jordan.
That's right.
And he says, one of the players that's who's way too stubborn to quit is going to be the one that can help. And Hal Jordan's willpower is one of the things that helps him not to lose.
Yeah.
And this is when Hal says, don't... He's trying to get his light to come on, and then the...
Yeah, he's quoting, or he's starting to say the oath.
Mm-hmm. And then Dawnbreaker says, don't bother. Your oath is worthless down here in my cave. And then Cyborg says, but the Green Lantern needs my help. They all do. The only problem is I can't help my team because the Dark Knight's secret weapon... The Dark Knight's secret weapon that we're all going to use against them to beat them is me. So Cyborg thinks he's their secret weapon. I don't know why he thinks.
Well, he's the secret weapon of the Dark Knights in this.
Hmm.
That's what it is. The Dark Knights have a secret weapon, and it's him because they've basically hacked into his systems.
Oh, I didn't catch that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's no good.
It says here, because the Dark Knights have a secret weapon to use against them, against the Justice League.
I see.
And it's him.
I thought the whole time he was saying, if I get out of here, I'm their secret weapon. Oh, man.
And then,
once again, the Dark Knights tie-in in Dark Knight books, they leave you on a bad note.
Uh-huh.
It's like, this is some bad stuff that's happened in the universe. Most of the time when you read these books, there's always a light side to it, but a cliffhanger. Yeah. These are just...
No. This
dark,
is
dark,
the dark,
dark
side of the multiverse. So, and then next week in Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps number 32, we get part 3 of Bats Out of Hell. But we have one more title that we're reviewing this week, and that is Batman the Devastator number 1. And this is the Superman Batman crossover. So, and it's actually not Superman himself; it is the Batman Doomsday.
Exactly. Which is really interesting. I like how they went about that. Well, in this world, in Dark Multiverse, you see their version of Batman saying, you should have seen it, Clark, from the beginning. Should have seen the bright colors and those friendly eyes that he has like a Boy Scout again. You should have known that there were going to be me, what was going to happen to all of us. And I told you the love for us that we have for each other to tear it down, the walls to keep us from trusting each other.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the one I was saying last week. Oh, there
what?
He is.
Who?
Firestorm.
Oh, Firestorm, yeah.
Now, this is on Earth Zero.
Yes, this is on Earth Prime. Right? No, this is the Dark Multiverse right now. So, this is in the Dark Multiverse.
Okay.
Oh, no, this is
Earth
Zero,
yeah.
So, this is the Devastator attacking the Fortress.
Now, where did... Guys, I just see Firestorm in here, and I don't remember him being introduced to us.
Yeah. Well, it's just, this is one of those, you can see there was a battle that has ensued here.
Okay. One day we'll figure out how he got there. And now you see Lobo from Just League of America taking on the Devastator, which I thought was awesome. You have basically Doomsday and Lobo going at it. Who would win in a fight
exactly.
like that?
Exactly. And you see, Barbados has sent the Devastator to the fortress to pick up something.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see in the background here, after all the devastation, the cosmic tuning fork that's in there. That basically, if I remember right, wasn't this the one they said that it's been kept in the fortress, but wasn't it what the Anti-Monitor was using back in the original Crisis?
Yes. And they kept it under there, and Superman told Batman, you can play with it under here so no one will know, but just be careful, which he wasn't listening, obviously.
And I love Lobo says here, looking at the Devastator, and tells him straight up, I hate to see what your Robin looks like. But they're fighting, and the Devastator finally grabs Lobo's hook and hooks Lobo with it.
Yeah, and he throws him all the way up to the sun.
Yeah.
Now, Lobo heals from anything, so he'll be back, but it's one...
Eventually.
He's just like, oh, frag it all. It's like, this is gonna hurt.
Yeah.
So now...
Then we get to Metropolis.
Mm-hmm, at the Daily Planet.
A day before that.
And this is Lois Lane talking to Jimmy. He's looking up all this stuff on the news, and she's like, I'm running late, so I'm going to go to Gotham. There's no time for looking into all this. We need to go down.
Yeah, they're trying to find... Well, they're
find out ourselves what's really going
on. Remember, Challenger Mountain has appeared inside Gotham.
Gotham, yes.
And we have the concentric rings of devastation at Gotham right now.
And that's what she's going there for.
Mm-hmm. Well, on her way to the elevator, or on the way out, she runs into Bruce Wayne.
Now, Bruce Wayne is in the Dark Multiverse, so what is he doing here?
Exactly. She's wondering, wait, is Clark okay? Wait, why are you here, Bruce?
Mm-hmm. Weren't they all looking for you? He says, oh, no, Lois, Clark isn't okay. Clark is the problem. Then as she goes to shake his hand starts getting all clammy and bony.
And all of a sudden, he turns into the Devastator.
Yeah, she says, what have you done to yourself? He said, I made it so he could never hurt me again. He never hurt you again. Never hurt none of us again.
Exactly. Then we kick back to Earth -1 in Metropolis many years ago.
Now, this story right here, if you guys have been playing Injustice Gods Among Us 2, or not Gods Among Us, just Injustice 2, this seems like what happened in there. Superman, and I guess Injustice 1. Superman basically goes crazy, becomes like a dictator. Batman just trying to try to take him down. I feel like that's where they pulled this from.
Okay.
Now, this is on Earth 1, Metropolis, many years ago, as Ken said. And also, this was a little reference to, I think, Batman vs. Superman with the Kryptonite spear.
Possibly.
So they're battling Superman and Batman. They're going at it. But the thing is, while Superman, Batman has this Kryptonite spear in his hand, Superman slices his arm off with his heat vision and goes for the kill of Batman. And he says, it's over, Bruce. I never understood why everybody just say, Bruce could take me down. Batman could take me down. If you give him the right technology in the right moment, he would beat Superman. He says, I don't see that happening right now. And he says, and as Batman's spitting up blood, coughing, saying, yes, I do. He says, Clark, I really did love you like a brother. I thought the world of you. You gave us hope. You were the future. You were going to make the future better for us. But I guess it was all a lie. And he hits his utility belt, and it's like,
well, then this shows here, though, this is being the Dark Multiverse still, but this is, and Superman says, do you understand how weak you all are to me?
Yeah.
So Superman has stepped off the deep end at this point.
And this is literally what we get in the video games and the comic books that's in there for the digital ones. But he hits this button, Bruce does, on his utility belt, and he says, I know it was all a lie, and I won't let you hurt us anymore.
So he's modified a strain of the Doomsday virus to basically turn himself into Doomsday.
And we all remember when Doomsday gets killed or a limb cut off, he never gets that limb or die in the same way they did before. His cells remember what happened and they block it so he never get hurt again. So his arm grows back and he starts just going at it with Superman. He's beating him up now, slams his hand to the ground, and he lets out this green foggy mist.
It looks
from
like
his
the kryptonite
breath.
Kryptonite fog.
It reminded me once again from Batman vs. Superman. Remember the green kryptonite fog you had in there?
Yeah.
That's what it reminds me of. But this fog doesn't just weaken him. It's like a virus that Superman breathes. He turns into like a Doomsday-ish creature with bones coming out of his body.
Well, it looks
but he
like
dies
what's happening here,
when the bones come out of
this,
his club.
Before the Doomsday virus is released, the city looks like a regular city. I mean, it's getting beat down.
But
when Batman releases the Doomsday virus, he turns into Doomsday, but the rest of the world around him starts sprouting spikes and stuff, too.
Exactly.
And that's all of a sudden what happens to Superman. Those spikes are coming out of the ground.
Oh.
And they impale Superman.
Okay.
All the spikes
I thought they were actually coming out of his body.
So the rest of the world has been exposed to the Doomsday virus also.
So in doing so, by protecting the world, he actually destroys the world like a lot of the other Dark Multiverse Dark Knights have been doing.
And this is when the Man Who Laughs shows up.
Mm-hmm. And he says that, where is it? Did he say that voice? Joker, I thought I killed you. And he says, no, or I thought he killed you, meaning Super. See, this is another thing that made me think, did this come from Injustice? Because Superman killed Joker in that world, in that story too.
It's possible.
I got to look into this, but it reminds me of what's going on there very heavily. And he says, Joker, I thought he killed you. He says, oh, no, you misunderstood. The two of us, we were set, you see. We're both Bruce Wayne and gone terribly wrong from a broken plan that never was meant to be. But I have been given a second chance, just like I'm going to give you a second chance by the cosmic will bring us all back to another world that's filled by light. We don't like that. So he says, bring me there. He devastates, but he's like, I'm in. This sounds like a good plan to me. So now we go back to Earth Zero, and you see Metropolis.
It looks like the Doomsday virus is taking over the city now.
With the people in. The people are turning into these Doomsday-ish creatures, just like Bruce turned himself into. It's like whenever he spreads this virus, it just turns the world and all the people in it into these Doomsday creatures. But we actually get some help from the Superman family. The House of L, really, I would say, family.
Exactly. So Doomsday is still messing with Lois. And out of nowhere,
you see Supergirl, Guardian, and Superwoman.
It's been a long time since we've seen Guardian
anywhere.
That's
what
I
showed.
That's kind
of a deep
pull.
Yeah, so we got to see Firestorm and Guardian.
He's showed up once or twice in Superwoman, I believe, since Rebirth.
Okay.
Because he is the chief of security at Cadmus.
Okay, I don't really remember that much, and I have that one. I don't remember.
Yeah.
But yeah, we got to see Firestorm and Guardian in here, so that's always good. But then,
so it shows that some of the other characters that we've not actually got titles from or have not seen them in the books are still in the universe.
Yes.
They just haven't had a spot, a story to tell yet.
Right, before at least them, but they are here. And this is when he starts taking them down. I mean, this is Doomsday. This is Doomsday fighting the Superman family.
But it's instead of, well, Doomsday is, has always been almost a brainless monster. It just is a force of destruction.
Mm-hmm.
This is Doomsday
with Bruce Wayne's brain,
Batman's brain.
Yeah, very dangerous. So also a lot of the people, as we see here, is this guy in a taxi. Lois says, "Stop! I need your help. You know, give me a ride." The guy in the taxi's dead.
Well, yeah, well, he's going. She's going to check on John and try to get him safe.
But the thing here, I notice a lot of the people that's in the city, this Batman, this Bruce Wayne, does not care because he's not turning the people into Metropolis into creatures like him, where they can at least have a life.
Yeah, they are.
No, some of them are dying.
Well, yeah. Well,
some of them can't take that virus.
The Doomsday virus kills.
Yeah, I thought some of them would just get turned into. They won't just die.
Well, eventually they would.
Eventually. Oh well. Ooh, that's gonna suck. That sucks.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Especially I thought some of them can survive
and
some can't.
As we're coming to, Lois gets in, drives the taxi over to her apartment, gets in there, activates the countermeasures or the security features they put into the loft to actually lock down the loft 100%, but they can't do that because one of the doors is open.
Yeah, and that's because
she sees
Jonathan.
John is out on the balcony. He's about to jump into the fray and help people, and she just grabs him as he's jumping off, throws him into a panic room, and tells him, "You stay here. Your dad's we built this so that nothing can get in
and protect you.
And you're going to be safe at least for a couple of weeks of food and water and stuff here until your dad can figure this out and come back."
Yeah, he's like, "Mom,
and
why aren't you in here with me? What's wrong?
Why are you not in here with me?" And you look, Lois is starting to be transformed by the virus also.
Yeah. And then this is where we see back to the Fortress of Solitude, the Anti-Monitor.
Now, this was all the day before the fight we saw earlier.
Yeah. The Anti-Monitor fork.
Yeah, the Cosmic Tuning Fork, I think, is what they're calling it.
He grabs that thing from Metropolis, jumps all the way into outer space, lands it right into Gotham City.
Well, yeah, the Barbados wants the Cosmic Tuning Fork on Challenger Mountain.
And this is where Gordon says, he says, "Look up in the sky." Oh God. I was like, I think he's going to go say something else. He's not. That's not
exactly.
Superman. And then
we get into the last page of the dark multiverse right now. You see Superman. Remember, in the dark multiverse, they wanted him to come over so that they could use the power of Superman that's collected in his body to help charge what they're doing there to try to bring the world or bring power to these worlds, I believe.
Because
they're trying to they're trying to save the dark multiverse.
Yeah. That's all I want to do. That's all Batman wants to do is save the day, but he's doing it the wrong way. And the next issue is The Dark Knight's The Batman Who Laughs.
Number one, which is going to be an interesting one, because you got to remember, the Batman Who Laughs has actually been controlling this the whole time. He's the one working directly for Barbados.
Yeah.
He's the leader of all the Batman.
Which I thought was really interesting. Still, at the end of the day, it's going to be a main Batman character that controls all of them. Joker and Batman together. I'm really curious on what out of all the characters, he's the one I'm most excited for.
Well, now that we've gone on our reviews, we've had the Black Lightning panel, we've had all of our news, there's only one thing that we got left to do.
We got somewhere to go.
And that sound can only mean one thing. It's time for our weekly trip to the comic book shop.
Yes, we are.
And this week, as every week, the comic book shop is brought to you by the band The Shazbots. Mm-hmm. That is their song, Comic Book Shop. Check them out on iTunes and Facebook and go over to shazbots.com, but let them know that the DC Superpowers podcast sent you. Now, we have, 10 books this week?
Yeah. Not that much.
And these are our previews for November 15th, 2017. And we're starting off with The Batman Who Laughs, number one.
And I'm going to take this one. I've been taking all the Dark Knight. I love this stuff. The Batman Who Laughs, part one. or issue number one. As the events of Dark Knight Metal rock the universe, the creatures of the Dark Knight stand ready to invade our world. How can the world's greatest heroes stop the horde of deadly beings that appear to be so powerful nightmare versions of familiar figures? Find out in the special tie-in issues, and the art is done by Riley Rosmo and written by James T. Tinian IV. They've been giving us the same description for all of these
very
Dark Knight
similar,
Metal.
Very, very similar. The next up, we get Superman number 33, Imperius Lex Part 3. Steppenwolf, Field General for Apocalypse, enlists Superman's son John into his canine cavalry to stop Superman from helping Luthor reclaim the throne once held by Darkseid. Art is done by Steven Segovia, Travis Moore, and Art Thibbett, and it's written by Patrick Gleason and Peter J. Tomasi. Now, you notice this. This drops the same week as the Justice League movie.
And Steppenwolf
and
is the main villain.
Is the villain of the Justice League movie, and they're bringing him back into the universe in this title.
I noticed that. As I said, DC will do that.
Exactly. Now, this has been an interesting story so far. I've read the first two parts of it already, and it's cool seeing them pick up in Apocalypse, and I believe this, the events of this, some of the events that are happening in this were set off by the Darkseid War, which I still have to read.
Okay.
Because Luthor gets there, there's already a resistance in Apocalypse that is looking for him to lead it. I believe that was set up in Darkseid War.
Yeah, Darkseid War, I got to read it myself. I read up on it, but I didn't really read the actual book in my hands.
Today that Comixology is actually running a sale. And they have Volume 1 and Volume 2 of Darkseid War for $6 each.
Okay.
So I may have to pick those up that way.
Same. Well, the second one is,
third book we have
is Justice League issue number 33. It's a metal tie-in. Bats Out of Hell finale. This is Justice League versus the Dark Knights. Fight the Dark Knights have taken a fallen Justice League to a frightening castle of Redacted. Inside the possessed Gotham City where they will be prepared to sacrifice. And the Justice League's only hope is Cyborg, who returns from the Dark Knight multiverse, has changed him forever. Okay, well.
And I think they have the written by wrong here.
That's what I was looking
because
at.
Because we just saw in the actual books it's being said that Robert Venditti is writing this, so we'll find out which one.
Yeah, but the art right now says Brian Kirkham and written by
Tyler Kirkham.
Tyler Kirkham, and then Brian Hitch is the writer.
So I'm thinking someone made a typo there. It's actually Robert Venditti.
We'll see. Well, you know, a month ago, we got the Christmas issue for Green Arrow, and it's like, wait a minute. This isn't even Thanksgiving yet.
Yeah. So, next up, we got Aquaman number 30, Underworld finale. After Dolphin confronts Aquaman with the horrifying truth of King Wrath's new regime, all hope for Atlantis is nearly lost until an emotional reunion with Vulko gives Aquaman a renewed sense of purpose. Meanwhile, Mera attempts a dangerous new plan to penetrate the crown of thorns and reunite with the love of her life at the cost of her own soul. Art is done by Stepan Sejic, and is written by Dan Abnett.
And the next one is Batwoman number 9, Fear of Loathing. Man, it's number 9 already. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Fear and Loathing Part 3. Dragged by Scarecrow's fear toxin and trapped in an
unrelenting?
Can't even get that word. Unrelenting desert. Batwoman must find her way out of the fears that she avoids, captured by many hands and death and the father's agent, Colony Prime. Art is done by Fernando Blanco and written by Marguerite Bennett. Yeah, the Scarecrow one last week was pretty scary, and it looked like we were getting later. A lot of these books I'm seeing got a lot of horror aspects to it.
Oh, no. Okay.
Issue number 11 is going to have Professor Pig in it.
Ah, okay.
So,
but, wrong. I was wrong when I was talking about Brian Hitch.
Mm-hmm.
He probably write that because, I don't know. No, according to let me look it up right here. But according to this, it was Joshua Williamson that was supposed to have wrote the next Justice League.
Let's see.
Let's look it up in the book that we're looking at. I don't want to get it there. According to the actual ad in the books itself.
Yeah, Hal Jordan is going to be written by
Jordan,
Robert Venditti and Ethan
next
Van Sciver.
Written by Joshua Williamson for Justice League 33 and not Brian Hitch.
So they were right. Okay.
So hopefully we'll find out next week. Or actually in a couple days.
Yeah.
But The next book we have is actually the next book in Bats Out of Hell. It is, or no, what am I thinking here?
I think we're on.
No, no, that was the end of Bats Out of Hell. No, this is Green Lantern's number 35. Well, I'm all messed up tonight.
Hey, we've had a long day, dude. We had a long day, both of us have.
2 weeks of conventions coverage and will that do that too. To you.
Yeah.
Well, we get Green Lantern's number 35 next. Obalfunga, where are you?
That's a nice name.
Yeah. Well, seeking protection, Balfunga, the Unrelenting, seeks out his one-time foes, the Green Lantern Corps. But can Jessica Cruz and Simon Baz trust a criminal who just left imprisonment in the Green Lantern Corps science cells? Art is done by Carlo Barbieri, and it's written by Tim Seeley. Ooh, this is Tim Seeley's debut on the book, I believe.
Mm, okay.
He's been writing, remember, he's been writing some Titans stuff, I think, and I think he's been writing Nightwing, hasn't
he? And I gotta read New Titans, because that one looks like it's taking a dark turn, too. Next one is Nightwing, issue number 33, Raptor's Revenge, part 4. The streets of Bloodhaven are burning. Raptor is pushing Nightwing for rejecting him, or punishing Nightwing for rejecting him. Nightwing must rally the city on the runoffs and hope that Blockbuster's hatred for him doesn't outweigh his loyalty for the people of Bloodhaven. Art done by Javier Fernandez and written by Tim Seeley. Yeah,
I thought so.
Yeah.
Well, next up, we have Super Sons, number 10.
These are some good books. These are fun books.
Yeah. Well, we get Secret Headquarters. In the aftermath of Planet of the Capes, big changes challenge both Damian and John as Superboy revels in his new power, and a decision by Batman rocks Robin's world forever. As promised earlier, the debut of the Super Sons' new Secret Headquarters. Art done by Jose Luis, and is written by Peter J. Tomasi. Now, the decision by Batman that rocks Robin's world forever, you think that's possibly the marriage proposal?
Maybe.
And him and Batman getting engaged to Catwoman?
Maybe.
Now, imagine out of nowhere, you find out Selina Kyle's going to be your stepmom.
Yeah, no, nobody would like that.
Well, no, maybe. I don't know.
Well, from what I've gotten from the books, they don't like her either.
Well, she's a villain.
Yeah. Well, she's a burglar.
She's a villain. She's a cat burglar, but she's a villain.
Yeah, she is. But you never know.
Cat burglar is a villain.
Well, who was? Who asked me that? I think Ty. Was it Ty that asked me that? Somebody. Somebody asked me: is Catwoman a villain or is she a hero right now?
Yes.
And I'm like, yeah, yes. It's like she's been both. I don't know really what she is right now. Well, the next issue is Trendy issue number 15. Dark Destiny finale. Constantine's quick thinking has brought the Trinity some time, but is it enough for Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman to stop Cersei and Ra's al Ghul from unleashing Pandora's pits? Uncertainties. Mount as Red Hood, Artemis, Bizarro rush in to save the day. Now, from what we remember last time, they were possessed, so if they're going to rush in to save the day, that's giving us a little spoiler. But
yeah, possibly.
Possibly. Art is Mick Gray and V. Ken Morton, and written by Marion.
V. Ken Marion.
His name
Rob
always
Williams.
Throws me off because your name is V. I want to say the fifth for some reason every time I see that. And this is the last book.
And the last book is Batman number 35. Dream of Me, part 3. Has the Caped Crusader passed the point of no return? Turns out he's going to need a little help from his friends, but this help comes with a downside. Batman's true intentions will be exposed. Art is done by Joelle Jones, and it's written by Tom King. And that wraps up our books for this week. And that pretty much wraps up the show for this week, too.
Mm-hmm.
So,
We had a fun past couple weeks, I would say.
Oh, yeah. It's been a very busy past couple weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully, going into next week, we're going to actually be close to back to normal.
Yeah. And also, they're going to have a fun end of the week, too, with Justice League coming out.
Oh, yeah. Justice League is going to be awesome. I know you're going to go see it this Thursday night.
Mm-hmm. Opening
so,
night.
And you're planning on live streaming afterwards, right?
Yes.
So keep an eye on Facebook Live.
Yes, guys.
Keep an eye on Facebook. 6 o'clock showing, right?
Yeah.
So somewhere between 8 and 9, probably.
And I was going to say, probably by 8, I'll be on the phone. Hopefully, you guys can see my lovely face on there and give you what I thought of Justice League first reaction of my thoughts right after the movie. Now, this is probably going to end out, like I said, around 8 o'clock, because the movie's at 6. Most movies I've seen that's been coming out this year for opening night is around 7 or 8.
Yeah.
This is really pushing it out there. There's a lot of movie times. Mm-hmm. Theaters are definitely hyped about this.
Exactly. Well, also, remember, check out the DC Superpowers Facebook page, or YouTube page. And DC Superpowers Podcast on YouTube. We have, I think, 3 videos up right now, but mm-hmm. our buddy Cameron has the first 3 interviews from Akron Comic Con pretty much ready to go, and he's going to be putting those up. He may have already done it by the time this releases.
And we'll have some pictures up, too. I took a couple pictures. And
we have a whole bunch of pictures to put up, so we're going to put those up probably up on Facebook, and maybe we'll link them up to the website.
And I put some on Instagram already, guys, so if you haven't checked that out, go look on there and see some of those great, great costumes that everybody was wearing.
So be checking the website, checking all of our social media, and we will have new content from Akron Comic Con coming very, very soon. So, Vern, why don't you let everybody know how they can actually get a hold of us?
We got some new stuff, so let me make sure my brain's right. Guys, you can find us on our website, first of all, at DCSuperpowers.com. And you can find us on our social media sites. Instagram, we are DC Superpowers Podcast. We are also the same for Facebook, but on Twitter, we are at SuperpowersDC for our personal uses. And you can find more pictures from the con on my page, Instagram, HowlNatWolf, Vernon McWaymore on Facebook, and I'm VYellow on Twitter.
You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at GW1Ken. On Facebook, I'm just Ken Rose. You can always find anything, everything for the show at DCSuperpowers.com.
That's right.
Also, on YouTube, at the DC Superpowers Podcast is the name of the channel.
Mm-hmm.
Give us a subscription, a subscribe. Hit that little subscribe button, and you'll get notifications and stuff every time we put up something new.
And if you like it, hit that thumbs up. We would greatly appreciate that, too.
That's right. Also, you can always find us on... email.
Yes.
DCSuperpowersPodcast@gmail.com. Send us your name and your address, and we will send you stickers.
Yes, we got a lot of stickers.
And these are high-quality stickers.
They really are. I was going to say, if the video's up, but we don't have the video right now, we put it on our laptop. You can see it on the video that we did live if you guys want to. We got it up there. Oh, and I need to post a picture of that one, too. I couldn't really find the best one, but I have a lot of them. So I'll put one of those up so you guys can see our faces and see our reaction of seeing everyone else out there. We had a good time.
That's right. Also, you can find us on our networks at the Tangentbound Network and the Weebie Geeks Networks at TangentboundNetwork.com and WeebieGeeksPC.com. And with that, Vern, I want to thank you for hanging out with me again, sir.
Always. It's a fun time in the basement of the Hall of Justice.
That's right. We'll see you next week.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll say you guys, hopefully you'll see me later this week.
Exactly. And also, remember, check the Facebook page, because normally on Monday nights, we record this show live on Facebook Live. So you go to the Facebook page, watch our beautiful faces live usually.
Mm-hmm.
Today was a little... last 2 weeks have been a little off, but next week we should be right back on schedule.
This is what happens when you go to a con.
That's right. As I said, thanks, Vernon. And Super Friends, we'll see you next week.